And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Going to be talking about taxes, going to be talking about education, and of course, the big debate last night. So, the mainstream corporate-controlled media has called it. Joe Biden was a meanie. He was a meanie. He was a bully. He was unhinged. Mike Huckabee said he looked like an obnoxious drunk. Wow. There's an awful lot of talk about his body language. You know, he was aggressive. He was being Joe Biden. Anybody who's seen the guy, anybody who's ever talked to him, knows that's how he is. That's who he is. That's what you get. And what you saw out of Paul Ryan, somebody who really worked very hard not to look like the, well, what he is. I mean, a little ideologue who has bought into the Ayn Rand worldview, which is screw you, screw me, hooray for them. And, you know, you look at what went on last night, and Joe Biden was right. It was a bunch of malarkey. It was a bunch of stuff. And you look at this, and some of the moments that I thought were spot on, and, you know, it's about time someone wake up and say, you know, enough is enough already. Biden said, these guys bet against America all the time. And you listen to their campaign rhetoric, and that's what it really is. From the beginning, from the very first day Obama took office, they have been betting against this country. And I've been saying it for the last 4 years. Look, these people, it's scorched earth with them. They don't care. Their ideology is me, me, me. And if I don't get mine, just like my kids, just like my 4-year-old, if she doesn't get her way, it doesn't matter. All bets are off. She gets her way or nobody's happy. And that's what the Republicans have done. From day one, we're going to make him a one-term president. Hope he fails. And every step of the way, they've gridlocked, they've blocked, they've delayed, they've obstructed. They've bet against this country. I mean, you go time and time again. You listen to Zach Womp. You know, let him fail. Let Detroit fail. You know, Volkswagen invested in Tennessee, a right-to-work state, with less wages, less health care. Let those people learn the lessons the hard way. Screw them. Mittens himself wrote the piece. Let Detroit go bankrupt. Betting against this country. And will do nothing to invest in this country. And that's, at some point, I'm hoping the Republicans wake up and realize your party's really gone off the deep end. You need to get involved and you need to take it back. You know, I still know a couple decent, rational people who call themselves conservatives, who believe in institution, who believe in conserving for the future, who believe in fiscal responsibility, who believe in personal responsibility. Yet, you know, you look at this current party, man, anything but those things. And I think Biden was right. You know, stop talking about how much you care about people. Stop it. Show him. Show me something. Show me a policy. Show me a policy where you take responsibility. And, you know, Biden's right. You go and you look at where their budget goes, what I call a moral document, 62% of the cuts that Ryan makes in his budget are on the backs of the least among us. So when he talks about his Catholic faith and he talks about his religion, and I got to be honest, as soon as people start talking about their religion and how, you know, how it guides them and how pious they are, I reach for my wallet because I know I'm in trouble. And like Biden said, the idea, if you heard that little soliloquy, the 47%, and you think he just made a mistake, Biden's right. Got a bridge to sell you because that's who they are. It's exactly who they are. It's where they stand. It's their positioning. A couple of the other comments I liked. I liked the fact that Biden brought up the fact that, you know, Ryan asked for the stimulus money that he is now bashing. It brought up the death panels, and I'm glad that Biden hit him with it. Like he said, every vice presidential debate, you hear the same kind of stuff about panels. There's no death panels. Stop it. But then you go and you look at that debate. what is interesting to me is it broke into some areas, and foreign policy was like one of the first areas. And the misinformation, I'll just call it lies. We'll call it what it is. Ryan was trying, and he failed to make the administration look weak. That was his goal on foreign policy. Keep throwing things out there and hope people buy into it. When he said it took the president 2 weeks to acknowledge that what happened in Libya was a terrorist attack, he was wrong. It was the very next day. In fact, I remember seeing it. It was from the Rose Garden. I remember seeing the statements come out of the Rose Garden on the 12th, where Obama said, look, no act of terror ever going to shake the resolve of this great nation. Not going to happen. And this whole thing about trying to portray that there's this big gap between us and Israel, not there. Especially when you're talking about Iran. I mean, the reality is, and it's an amazing thing, you've got most of the industrialized world, you've got the industrialized world and 49 nations agreeing on sanctions. We couldn't get that back in the late 70s. I mean, this is the world really coming together. This is you can't do what Ryan says you're going to do. He throws it out, well, we're going to make sure he does. Well, how are you going to make sure that they don't get a nuclear weapon? And this whole thing that, well, you know, when Obama took office, when he was elected, they had enough fissile material to make one bomb. Now they've got five. And the reality is well, it's highly misleading and really unproven. And even the Institute for Science and International Security says it would take Iran more than 2 months to produce that amount if it started with 20% grade uranium. And it would take several months to make enough for a bomb. And like Biden said, they don't have a way of delivering it. So pounding your chest, throwing all this stuff out there, I don't see how it's helping. I don't see how it's helping us in foreign policy, in the foreign policy realm. It may be a good talking point for the mindless. It may be a good chest-thumping point for the hawks, but the reality is, for the security of the country, not so much. And I would hope that the guy who wants to be president would kind of back away from that. And I look at the sanctions. You know, there was a bone of contention where, you know, Biden said, look, we got this done. And Ryan said, well, you know, well, we wanted it, but the administration blocked us. And you go, well, hold on. they're done. And the Israeli president has been effusive with praise that it got done. So, I mean, this is one of those moments where you go, okay, well, we got it done. And there are some other things in the foreign policy world. Iran's racing towards a nuclear weapon. Reports that I've seen, nobody's really sure of the racing part. Would they want one? You bet they would. But their economy right now is falling. And it's because of those sanctions. On defense, you know, he threw out the cuts again that he voted for. You know, and it just kind of blows my mind that a lot of the things that Ryan talked about going after Obama and going after Biden over, he championed himself just for different aims. But, you know, that's, I guess, a whole different discussion there. He did say something that was a repeat of something Romney had said back, I think, January, February, that Politico or PolitiFact rated as pants on fire. He said if the cuts were to go through, our Navy would be the smallest it's been since before World War I. That's already been debunked, but it doesn't stop them. It doesn't stop him from saying it. And on energy front, you know, he went after the president and the vice president over the $90 billion in what he called green pork. Even though the independent reviews, and you know, we've been through this on the show in the past, there's no cronyism, there's no waste. It's a fantastic program, worked very well. It was a Republican, Herb Allison, in fact, the finance chair for the McCain for President 2008 campaign, who did the independent review. He found nothing. And the other thing that caught my attention was Ryan brought up the money spent on electric cars and windmills in China. Electric cars in Finland and windmills in China. The windmills in China, just flat wrong. And the electric cars in Finland, That money didn't come out of the stimulus. In fact, it originated with the Energy Department's Advanced Technology Vehicles Program, which was before Obama took office. So one of those things where before you point your finger, maybe you should know who to point it at. And then there were the tax side of the discussion. The math just doesn't add up. I would love to be able to say, yes, we could cut taxes 20% and everybody would be happy. And the meme that they use, that if we cut taxes by 20%, more money will come in. It defies logic. And it defies that thing I learned in second and third grade called math. 2 + 2 can't equal 5. No matter how many times I count on my fingers, 2 fingers and 2 fingers are always going to be 4 fingers. If you cut 20% of the fingers, you're going to have less than 4 fingers, right? But he didn't stop him anyway. He says 8 out of 10 businesses file their taxes as individuals and not corporations, and this is going to be a huge tax on them. And the reality is, look, I don't know many small business owners who make over $250,000 a year in profit. I know a lot of small business owners who, like me, don't make $250,000 a year. So I'm not sure where that's coming from. Throughout the high corporate taxes, again, debunked. Throughout the fact that, 6 other studies that were funded by people like him say, well, we're not going to spend $5 trillion. Yes, they are. At the end of this, the reality is exactly what it is. On the healthcare front, went after Obamacare. It's an assault on religious liberty. Nonsense. I must have gotten 15 emails today of people saying, well, even the Catholic Church says, well, insanity there as well. And it went after Obamacare because, if you like your healthcare plan, you can keep it. Well, you can. If the costs don't keep going up. I mean, at the end of the day, when you have two competitors, you're going to have to figure out who to take. And understand, the majority of Obamacare hasn't gone into effect yet. 2014. And a little later on the program, I want to talk a little bit about where we are today, because I've got a friend who's in not good shape, who is struggling because uninsured. One of the 55 million now uninsured. One of the potentially 70 million, if 72 million, if Romney becomes president. But the debate went the way you thought it was going to go. I mean, to me, one of the worst moments of the debate. And I thought the moderator did a fairly good job. I think the woman did, Raddatz did a very good job, except for her question on Medicare, where she starts off, let's talk about Medicare and entitlements. Well, Medicare and Social Security are not entitlements. Those are things people have paid their entire lives for. I'm not going there. But she says both Medicare and Social Security are going broke and taking a larger share of the budget in the process. Social Security doesn't add one dime to the deficit, to the debt, doesn't come out of the budget. It's its own line. But she goes on to say, will benefits for Americans under these programs have to change for the program to survive? Mr. Ryan, I mean, if that's not a beach ball-sized softball, I mean, really. I mean, that is just here's the elephant. Go ahead, swing. And he says, yeah, absolutely, Medicare and Social Security, they're going bankrupt. These are indisputable facts. Well, let me dispute them for a second, your indisputable facts. Medicare is going to be able to meet its obligations to 88% of the people to 2085. That's if we do nothing, nothing at all. Social Security, for the next couple of decades, till 2037, is fully funded. And at 2037, it will pay 75% on infinitum. That's what the actuaries are saying. So this idea of bankrupt, of broke, sorry, not buying it. Didn't buy it the first time they threw it up, don't buy it now. And I surely don't buy, let's reform it. Like he said, if you reform these programs for my generation, people 54 and below, you can guarantee they don't change for people in the near future. Nonsense. Reform my backside. And then there was the $716 billion fabrication. We've been through that. You know that's a bold-faced lie. But he had to throw it out there because that's one of his talking points. It is what it is. And they went after the Medicare Advantage things. We've talked about that. The reality is they are flat wrong on every one of his points. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Harrisburg School District and some of the, these charter schools that may be popping up. Quick break, back after this. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hell
with. Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. In the previous debate, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney told seniors over the age of 60 that they didn't need to keep listening because they wouldn't be impacted by his Medicare proposals. Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollock said on Thursday that seniors, in fact, should pay close attention to what Romney is selling. His organization laid out five key ways in which seniors would be impacted by the Romney-Ryan plans.
It would cause seniors to pay considerably more out of pocket with respect to premiums and other out-of-pocket costs. On average, over the next 10 years, the average increased cost that Medicare beneficiaries would incur would be $347 per year over the next 10 years.
Romney's pledge to repeal the Affordable Care Act on day one of his presidency would reopen the donut hole.
Affordable Care Act fixes this. It fixes it on a gradual basis. Right now, what the Affordable Care Act does is it provides 50% discounts for people purchasing brand-name drugs when they are in this coverage gap. Ultimately, by 2020, the Affordable Care Act totally eliminates the donut hole. It eliminates this coverage gap. And so this would be a real help to seniors who have very substantial prescription costs.
Repealing the Affordable Care Act would also put a huge burden of preventive care back on the heads of seniors.
Seniors no longer have to pay anything for those, whether it's deductibles or co-pays. And in 2011, almost 26 million people on the Medicare program availed themselves of this benefit.
Privately run Medicare Advantage programs have undermined traditional Medicare's fiscal health while taking a heavy toll on taxpayers. Doug Cunningham has more.
That's according to a new research article published in the International Journal of Health Services. The researchers say Medicare has overpaid private health insurance companies by a staggering $282.6 billion, most of that in the past 8 years. Authors of the report, Drs. Ida Hellander, Steffi Woolhandler, and David Himmelstein, say that's wasted money that should have been spent on improving patient care, shoring up Medicare's trust fund, or reducing the federal deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We need to cut the waste so we can keep taxes down and make sure we have money for critical programs that help our families and our seniors.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. I am with Tom Corbett. We need to cut the waste, cut the waste, cut the abuse, cut the fraud, cut it now. In fact, a good place to start, charter schools. I just saw a statistic, a number just blew my mind. During the school year of 2009-2010, school districts in this Commonwealth paid charter schools almost $800 million. $800 million. That's $800 million that came out of your neighborhood school, went to who knows where, and you see some of these fly-by-night plays, like the Frontier Virtual Cyber Charter School, or this vocational technical school that they're trying to start here in the Harrisburg area that maybe they have someone, maybe they don't, maybe there's volunteer teachers. That's no way to run an education system. But, you know, $800 million, and that was a couple years ago. What's it going to be next year and the year after when these profiteers get their mitts in it? I'm telling you, we're screwed. We better get organized. We better get together, and we better fight back on this. I've got Brendan Murray. He's a school board member here in the Harrisburg area with the Harrisburg School District. Brendan, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you again for having me on, Rick. It's always a pleasure to talk with you about the school district and things that are going on.
$800 million in 2009-2010. $800 million to these charter schools.
My jaw dropped as soon as you actually said the stat. I was thinking maybe a couple million, maybe. But this is, I mean, we know it firsthand in the Harrisburg School District, because every time we get a check registry for how much, you know, we're paying out to these charter schools, all the new board members that have come on since I've been here always ask, well, wait a minute, there's that much money going out to the charter schools? And we always have to explain to them, yes, unfortunately, this is the amount of money that is going out.
I mean, it's just outrageous to me. And I got to be honest, before we get into James Roebuck's bill, which I think is a step in the right direction, there still needs to be a lot more done. But, you know, I remember at the beginning of this school year where the Harrisburg School District, and maybe you can talk to it, because it's infuriating me that you guys were able to save kindergarten half day, but you're not going to provide transportation. But as a matter of law, you have to provide transportation that kindergartners go to charter schools. Is that right?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. We looked into that. Our superintendent, Dr. Sybil Bernie Knight, we weren't participating in the busing of the students from kindergarten, because we believed, and that's what the corporate administration told us. They told us one thing, and it was related to a different class. It was actually a class 2 school district, as opposed to what ours is, a class 3. So we were going along with what the administration had told us. Unfortunately, they told us the wrong information.
No, of course they did.
By accident, and it was no fault of our own, were we breaking the law at the beginning of the school district, or of the school year.
I mean, and the other thing that gets me is that in this state, kindergarten isn't even mandatory. It isn't even mandated. And you would think in this day and age, where we have so many studies and so many statistics and so many examples of kids, my daughter, 4 years old, she can read. The earlier you get them into a structured program, the earlier you get them into education, the better they're going to be, the better off we're going to be as a society, as a nation. Yet here, am I missing something, Brandon?
No, not at all. In fact, I've spoke with Rob Teplitz, who I know you've had on a few times, who's running for the state Senate seat, who's going to be hopefully taking over for Jeff Percola. Him and I have sat down and talked about this. I mean, this is something that is fundamentally important, to put a bill out there as soon as possible to make the whole state of Pennsylvania a step forward in the right direction, as opposed to always wondering whether or not each year Harrisburg and other school districts that are financially strapped are going to have to worry about whether they're going to have to cut kindergarten or not. This is absolutely absurd to any board member that would think that education should be first in someone's budget.
So let's talk about James Roebuck's bill. State Representative James Roebuck, he proposed House Bill 2661. Tell me, what's in this for the school district?
Well, what I would like to do first is just tell you that this is a huge step forward. It is not the cure-all, but it is definitely a huge step forward. And some of the things that are going to affect us. We had a charter school, Robert Brown Charter School, that was started up quite a few years back, and we revoked the charter after realizing that they just financially were not sustainable. One of the things that happened in this situation was that Mosaic, a company that was one of these manager groups that comes in and gives the school most of what they need when it comes down to putting an academic curriculum together, was taking a percentage of the revenue out to take care of the cost of what they were accomplishing. This bill would nullify that. So therefore, people would not have to worry of whether or not the charter schools and the school districts would not have to worry about whether or not 50% of what they're trying to accomplish, the money that's coming in from the school district, is going to go right into the profiteers' bank accounts. I mean, that's a huge thing that is going to help us out. Another thing that they want to really do is you can now take care of special needs students that are tested. If they go to the charter school and they find out that they are special needs, they are, in our district, cost us $20,000 per student. Now, that's an obscene amount of money to pay to an outside vendor to take care of a student that, if we can, which in all cases we are able to take care of those students, so why should we pay an outside vendor anywhere near the amount of money that we would to take care of a student that we already can house in our school district?
Yeah, so I got to be honest. The first part of that, Brendan, is, you know, I listened, you know, if I'm a charter school operator, I'm going to be pushing parents to go get their kids tested to make sure that, man, I've got a whole school full of ADHD kids. I've got a whole school full of kids that are deemed special needs, so I can cash in.
I can't say that has happened in our school district, but I can guarantee you, if you let the profiteers and anyone who wants to privatize education an avenue to make more money, they're going to take it.
Look, I mean, you got con men coming to this game, and I look at that Frontier Virtual Cyber Charter School that went down in flames, and I'm hoping people go to jail over that. But you bring con men to this and con women to this educational system, you're going to get people who think that way. I mean, because as you're laying it out, I'm going, well, I mean, the alternative, what you do is you just get a whole school full of these kids, and boom, there's a huge cash cow.
Exactly. And another investigation that's going on now is about testing, whether or not some of the charter schools were, you know, manipulating the scores for the AYP scores, the annual yearly progress scores. Now, this is another thing that this bill will take care of. It will go ahead and we will have to see the scores for each year from these charter schools. And we will be able to really delve into it to make sure that everything is on the up and up, because there are only a few school districts like ours that have 90% free or reduced lunch students that are a high minority district. And most of them right now are charter schools. And they are doing better academically than we are. The reason for that is because the students are able to be cherry-picked.
Right.
And we've talked about that before. So this is another instance where this bill does the right thing. I mean, this bill, to be honest with you, when I read this bill, I out loud said, thank you. Because there are so many different little nuances to this bill that brings accountability, like the transparency of the meetings. Now you're going to be able to get writing of what these people are really thinking about in these board meetings. I mean, it's no longer going to be in a backdoor, you know, backdoor rooms with locked key and people not knowing what's going on behind the closed doors. I mean, that's a huge transparency issue that's really going to go to the core of accountability that we all want from our school districts.
I agree with you. And, you know, but at the end of it, you know, the charter idea, I mean, I'm not entirely against. It's the profit charters I'm against. I'm not against having schools that are focused. I'm not against having schools that pick the best of the best to make sure that they're pushed further and harder. I'm not against that. I'm against the profit side of all this. I'm against taking resources that should be going to educating children and transporting children and feeding them and doing all the things that hopefully, as you pointed out, this is a high poverty community, helping in the community. Instead of saying, here, Mr. Billionaire, here, Mr. McGregorian, build another mansion, here, build another vacation home. That's what I'm against.
And then that goes along with another part of this bill, which is a great part. If the school district pays more than they need to in the year, in that year, the charter school will have to give money back to the school district. Now, that is probably one of the most important parts of this law because of how much overpaying I believe that the school districts end up doing. I mean, you can't tell me that a cyber charter school costs the same as a brick-and-mortar charter school, no matter whether we agree whether or not a charter school is good or not.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're paying for a computer and some software. And hopefully.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully they even have a tech, you know, a technical person to take care of that stuff. But that's not even a good possibility either.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the Frontier Virtual Cyber Charter School, and I keep bringing them up because, you know, we were on that for a while. We sat in on one of their board meetings, on one of their, you know, their CEO board meetings, where they wanted to get a math tutor, and they were going to pay him $10 an hour, and they were going to look on Craigslist. And you go, do we really want to, are you going to get the best qualified math tutor on Craigslist for 10 bucks an hour? Maybe in the cyber charter world you will, but not in the school system that I want.
Now, the only thing that I would say about this, this bill that I would like to see, and this has come up in our board meetings, is that I would like to see them add another part to this, and that would be building specifications. Because we had a charter school that we just put through, and at that point in time, when we were looking at the building, all they have to do in the application is give an address and know that the building exists. That's it. They don't have to give you specifications of the building whatsoever. So if they're going to house special needs students, they're going to need to be able to have wheelchair accessibility.
Right.
They're going to need to be able to get all of these things lined up so that we know that our students are getting the education and are able to get into the building correctly. And that's one thing that I would like to see added, or someone to possibly bring an amendment to it, because that's a huge part of this. Because, I mean, we can't stop a charter from being put through due to that situation. And another part of the bill that I would like to see is the fiscal beginning of the charter. All of the weight is held on the school district to really open up the school to open up their school. I would like to see them have some kind of stake in the game before they're able to be granted that charter, such as already having money from a bank stating that they will definitely back the funds that are needed for that first year. Because that's a huge part of why charter schools do not succeed in the long run. It isn't necessarily always the academics. However, I do think that it is a most imperative is to make sure that we educate. But the financial aspect and the burden that falls on the school districts when these schools fail is astronomical.
Have you seen any studies on what the failure rates are and how much, has there been any look into how much money we've spent on the startup? I mean, if charter schools are anything like other businesses, the vast majority of them fail within a very short period of time. I'm curious if there have been any studies on that.
I did not see any studies on that, but I do know that how it ends up failing when it comes down to the problems is that they don't meet the actual students that they think that they're going to be able to bring in.
Right.
So therefore, the money from the school district does not pile in like they expect. Therefore, they're always kind of running behind. And so they have to play catch up at all points to try to bring more students in and more students in and more students in. And the other thing that that goes to that point is the advertisement and the money that is being spent on promotion. Now, I know you've talked about this because I listen to your program quite often about you do not believe that anyone should have any money from our school district paying for anyone to promote a new school coming into their district. This bill takes care of that.
Good, good. I mean, for me, the bottom line in all of this, and quite frankly, the bottom line of this whole charter movement for me is, one, to profitize from education so that the billionaires and millionaires in this country can line their pockets. Two, destroy working conditions for teachers and destroy these solidly middle-class jobs. And three, push an ideology on our children that they want. At no point is this about, in my opinion, and you'll disagree, but to me this whole charter movement is not really about the kids. I mean, they throw that out there, oh, we care, but I'm not seeing it. I'm just not.
No, I completely agree with you on this. I stand with the teachers and the teachers' unions as much as I possibly can when it comes down to this because you know, my family is a union family. My great-grandfather was a coal miner. My grandfather was a coal miner. And I've been a union worker for a long time now. So I don't like to see the tear down of, you know, this institution that is so important to our youth, the teachers. And I think that this is a very quick escape hatch for the profiteers to try to get in, crush the unions, and unfortunately lead to, you know, different avenues for people to make money, because most of the money that comes in and the new techniques and new programs and all the different reading techniques that come in from all of these different schools. I mean, they had a huge charter school agenda when it comes down to what kind of academics they're going to push. They have these big, I think they had the first annual charter school, I guess it was an event that was in Lancaster or somewhere close that was held. And it was all about pushing all things that have to do with, you know, the academic part of charter schools.
Yeah, buy our program, buy our software, buy our all of that stuff. And there's tons of it out there. It's an entire industry now. Is where when I was a kid, they just mimeographed off a couple of tests. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry. Thanks in part to No Child Left Behind and really all the money pushing. Oh, we need to have more accountability and do more testing. No, we need to educate critical thinkers. That's what we need to do. Brendan, it's always great talking with you. I'd love to have you back as this moves on. The bill, House Bill 2661. Put forth by James Roebuck. Give your representative a call. Let's see if we can get this passed. Brendan, I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you again for having me on, and have a good weekend.
You too. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Gamley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Gamley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Gamley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com. My job as a free-range commentator and political yakety-yacker requires very little heavy lifting. But as a Texan, I do have the occasional burden of having to explain Rick Perry's periodic eruptions of volcanic inanity. Or is it insanity? Perry, the now-famous Governor Oops, went off again in a recent conference call to promote a right-wing politico-religio-electioneering stunt dubbed 40 Days to Save America. The 40 days terminate on November 6th, Election Day, and the whole silly thing is nothing but a come-to-the-GOP-Jesus altar call, orchestrated by the partisan pulpit pounder Rick Scarborough. Of course, it's a call to save America from Barack Obama. Los Dos Ricks were trying to gin up turnout among evangelicals who are less than enthused by a Republican nominee who's a multimillionaire Mormon from the Cayman Islands, so Perry laid it on thick. He declared that America is in the midst of spiritual warfare, forced upon purist Christians by Obama's, quote, effort to remove any trace of religion from American life. Really, Rick? When did he say that? Never mind facts, the governor claimed that we truly are Christian warriors, Christian soldiers, battling this separation of church and state which has been driven by the secularists. Yeah, satanic secularists like Thomas Jefferson, who wrote in 1802 about the founders' determination to build that wall of separation to forestall an American Taliban. Oh, pay no attention to history, cried the Right Reverend Rick. It's onward Christian soldiers to take, quote, the decisive action we need to spread God's grace throughout the United States. This is Jim Hightower saying, geez, Mitt Romney is the spreader of God's grace? That's one vicious God. So, how to explain this flow of political magma from Preacher Perry? Easy. He's insane. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
An innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck. Between a rock and a hard place. And I'm down on my luck. Facts and lawyers, guns and money.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Saw this article in the Patriot yesterday. Caught my attention. The headline, and you got to love it, owner of Giant Foods asks West Shore School District for tax abatement for meat-cutting facility. Now, we're talking to Brendan Murray there, Harrisburg School Board. You look at school boards across the state, struggling for revenue. Here, almost can't provide transportation for kindergarten students to get to kindergarten. Stop and think about this for a second, because this is important. This is where our money's gone. This is how we've gotten to this mess. This is why we can't fix our roads and bridges. This is why we're screwing kids going to school right now. Why we cut $1 billion each of the last 2 years from public education? Why college is costing so much? Why the advancement in the middle class is being neutered? They want a 10-year tax abatement. They want $400,000 in tax abatements over the next 10 years. And as the spokesman of Ahold USA said, we're just looking for a little head start. Just a little head start. We plan to pay taxes for a couple of years. We're just looking a little head start. Here's what this meat packing plant is going to be. They claim it's going to be 400, maybe 800 jobs. This is what the article says. Are these new jobs? Are these the jobs that we're creating? And the answer is no, because if you read through the article, what they're going to do is they're consolidating all of their meat cutting operations throughout the region. So they're going to lay off all the people in the stores. They're going to put them into a factory, and they're going to cut the meat centrally and then distribute it out. So, you know, go into Giant to get your fresh cut meat at the counter, done, gone, not going to happen anymore. Prepackaged at this facility where they want, that's right, they want a tax abatement. But the problem is, and maybe they, being a Dutch company, they haven't figured out how this whole theft of economic dollars works, because they've already broken the ground on the facility that they plan on consolidating all of these jobs to. So, you know, they're begging, they got their hand out, but they've already broken ground. See, what you got to do, you know, how this is supposed to work is you hold them hostage, say, well, we might move to Maryland might move to Ohio or West Virginia, and you get them bidding against each other. That's how you do it. But what you're seeing now is the districts, and good for them, are saying, well, we're going to have to decide down the road. But you look at the school district, the West Shore School District, $2.2 million in state budget cuts in 2010. You look at Cumberland County. Property taxes are going to go up next year 22% to 30%. That's money that used to fund education. That's money that used to fund the local government. And now you got Ahold who's saying, well, we're going to consolidate all these jobs, and I'll bet you all for a lower wage. And you're going to give us a tax break. You see, I look at this and you go, maybe this company from the Netherlands, maybe they should take a lesson from Dick Yingling Jr., who is shaking down the Commonwealth as we speak. We talked about this the other night. You know, and again, understand, this is education dollars. This is the future of our country. This is the future of this nation being handed away to these corporations who are going to build anyway. It's not a matter of we're going to give them this money and they're going to go, oh, I got this money, I'm going to build. No, they're going to do it anyway, because especially in the Yingling situation, they want to meet demand. They want to expand. This is good. I'm happy. Yes, go expand, build, create jobs. Yes, do the free market thing. but I shouldn't have to pay for it. I don't even drink the crappy beer. And you shouldn't have to pay for it. What happened to the free market? What happened to get out of the way? What happened to that? If you remember, and we talked about this the other night, you had Yuengling saying, well, we don't make business decisions on incentives, but if you're going to give me the money, if you're going to give it to somebody, well, we'll stand there and take it from them. I mean, so how much more business friendly can you get? I mean, because this is what we're doing, man. $400,000 that Ahold wants for theirs. I'm sure Yuengling's going to want a couple of million dollars. Where's that money come from? Comes from our kids' future. Comes from education. Comes from the general assistance budget that they eviscerated, kicking 70,000 of the most vulnerable people in this state to the curb. You want more business friendly? You want more business friendly policy? Because how much more business friendly can we get? Here's a pile of money. Oh, please build the plant you were going to build anyway. You want to talk business friendly? Look at House Bill 2626, which will probably come up for a vote this Monday. What it's going to do is it's going to go, well, you know what, employer? You know that state income tax that your employees think they're paying to the state? You keep 95% of it. Go ahead. Well, go ahead. Just keep it. Yeah. You know, we understand that your workers are paying you for the privilege of working for you. That, my friends, is business friendly. And eventually, you know, maybe the feds will jump on board too. Oh, federal tax, sure, keep that too. And oh, by the way, keep the Medicare and all the other stuff. Just keep the wages. Just give them bread and water. And the thing that gets me is, you know, stop and think about this income tax that we think we're going to be paying to our local school districts and to all the other things, all the roads and all that. Massive drain from our budget. And what's going to happen when 95% of the state income tax that we think we're paying to our state to do all the things that needs to be done, what happens when that money's not in the pot? What happens? Oh, yeah. More cuts. More pain. More austerity. More screw you. Because we've got to help the job creators. The only problem is, by giving them all of this tax revenue, it's not going to create any new jobs. It was supposed to, but then they watered it down because, you know, they want to be inclusive. They want to make sure everyone has a shot, right? Man, I'll tell you, how much more screwed up can we be? But this is conservative policy run amok. And you look in this state, and we've been saying this for years. Thanks to that magical box in Delaware, you know, the loophole, you know, that magic box, you know, about 2.5 by 3.5 inches high, you know, about 8 inches deep. It's got magical, mystical powers that when you put money through it, on the other side, it comes out tax-free. If you can afford to have that status. The big companies, in fact, 70% of corporations here in the state of Pennsylvania pay no corporate net income tax. Nothing. And now, thanks to this 2626, not only will they pay no state tax, they're going to be able to keep the payroll tax as well. That is business friendly. And we need more of it. Absolutely more of it. What do you think? Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
While the poor man pays the fan, oh, they're billing me, all killing me. Lord have mercy on the working man.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky.
Thursday, October 11th. The waning crescent moon and dazzling planet Venus will come closest together for the month before sunrise tomorrow morning and Saturday.
They'll be the brightest and second brightest nighttime worlds, pairing up in the eastern pre-dawn sky for the next few mornings. Given clear skies and an unobstructed eastern horizon, you'll be able to see Venus and the moon before sunrise, no matter where you are in the world.
At mid-northern latitudes, the moon and Venus will rise about 3 hours before the sun. At middle latitudes in the southern hemisphere, they'll rise only shortly before sunrise.
Venus is the second brightest planet, and there are several reasons why. Venus is the second closest planet to the sun after Mercury, so the intensity of sunlight hitting Venus is much greater than for the more distant planets. Also, Venus's orbit is the closest one to Earth's orbit. Plus, Venus's cloud cover reflects a greater percentage of its incoming sunlight than any other solar system planet.
The reflective cloud cover surrounding Venus makes this world outwardly bright and beautiful, yet inwardly dark and mysterious. Tomorrow, before sunrise, look for this beautiful planet basking in sunshine and shining close to the thin, waning crescent moon. If you miss them tomorrow, look again on Saturday. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm on a Mexican radio.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website. And also get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. Andy sent me an email during the break talking about energy policy. He said, you know, we can never become fossil fuel independent. Never. We can drill and drill, but we will never become energy independent with only 2% of the world's oil reserves. And he's right. I mean, you know, you can talk about drill, baby, drill and dig and all of the other things. You're not going to be independent that way. And they have to know that. But it's about pandering for the money. And he also points out, did you hear Mitt's a good man, according to Representative Paul Ryan during the debates. Evidently, he gives 30% of his income to charity. Andy writes, it surprises me that VP Biden didn't pounce on that one, and probably more than a majority of that went to the Mormon Church. And he goes into his views on the Mormon Church, which, you know, a lot of people have very negative. I'm not ticking on anybody's religion. Believe what you want. I know people who believe in spaghetti noodles. So at the end, I don't know what's going to matter. But, you know, the reality is I'm not going to say Romney's a bad guy. I'm not going to say he's a capitalist. His policies screw a lot of people over so that he can gain. Absolutely. The 30%, you're probably right. Most of it was given to the church. And when conservatives talk about that they're more charitable, most of their deductions do go to church. Personally, I donate to specific individual agencies because they do good work. I don't know that I'm a big fan of giving money to the churches, although we do to ours because you got to keep it going. But not in the way that in the opulence that we have seen some of these mega churches. And you know the reality is I don't think it was the right move for would have been the right move for Biden to pounce on it. I think Biden handled it right. Yeah, he's. Bad guy, fine. He's a charitable guy. That's not the problem. The problem is his policy. The problem is his tax plan is horrible. It's going to destroy families. It's going to harm the economy. His policies on everything else are going to destroy this country and put us right back where we started from. So after 4 years of digging out from the mess of conservative ideology, he's going to take us right back, only worse. The Bush handouts, skewed towards the very top, will be that much worse. I thought he handled it right. You can take the approach that you pounce on the Mormon Church, and I don't want, you know, once you start talking about one religion, you got to talk about another. This whole thing with extremism, and just keep your religion to yourself. And I had this discussion with my aunt this afternoon, who, you know, sent me an email saying, well, you know, Biden lied because the Catholic Church said this. And I said, look, I don't want to know what the Catholic Church says. Stay out of it. Anytime anybody, and I don't care what faith you are, anytime someone tells me how pious they are and how it's their religion who shapes their views and how they follow their religion, that scares me. Because the only people who have ever screwed me over in deals, you do financial deals or whatever, the only people who ever screwed me over or tried to are the people who wear their religion on their sleeves. You know, I walk with him written on the side of their car and all of that stuff. Those are the people who try and screw you. So keep your religion to yourself. And you know what? Show me. Don't tell me. Act like a decent person. Follow those 10 little rules. I don't need them plastered all over. Just follow them. Be a decent human being. I don't know if it's that hard. But yet I look at the conservatives who, you know, someone just sent me a picture of a meeting down in Lancaster where a guy's wearing a T-shirt saying, put the white back in the White House with a Romney Ryan sticker on it. And you go, yeah, that's quite religious, quite pious. Thanks for the email. Again, if you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, check out thericksmithshow.com for the podcast. Also, get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. In the second hour, we're going to talk about tomorrow night's movie, 6 p.m. at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 Lowther Street. We're going to be showing the movie 6 p.m. Going to be showing the movie Heist, Who Stole the American Dream. Going to have a conversation afterward. Because you know what? We've got to remember, you know, September of 2008 seems like an eternity ago. But the same policies that got us there are the same policies that the Ryan Romney ticket are pushing and wanting us to go back to. We've got to remember. We've got to talk about why, how, where, and how to stop it. That's why tomorrow night, 6 p.m., the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 Lowther Street, 6 p.m. Hope to see you there. Let's take a quick break. Right back with hour two of the program.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. In the previous debate, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney told seniors over the age of 60 that they didn't need to keep listening because they wouldn't be impacted by his Medicare proposals. Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollock said on Thursday that seniors, in fact, should pay close attention to what Romney is selling. His organization laid out five key ways in which seniors would be impacted by the Romney-Ryan plans.
It would cause seniors to pay considerably more out of pocket with respect to premiums and other out-of-pocket costs. On average, over the next 10 years, the average increased cost that Medicare beneficiaries would incur would be $347 per year over the next 10 years.
Romney's pledge to repeal the Affordable Care Act on day one of his presidency would reopen the donut hole.
Affordable Care Act fixes this. It fixes it on a gradual basis. Right now, what the Affordable Care Act does is it provides 50% discounts for people purchasing brand name drugs when they are in this coverage gap. Ultimately, by 2020, the Affordable Care Act totally eliminates the donut hole. It eliminates this coverage gap. And so this would be a real help to seniors who have very substantial prescription costs.
Repealing the Affordable Care Act would also put a huge burden of preventive care back on the heads of seniors.
Seniors no longer have to pay anything for those, whether it's deductibles or co-pays. And in 2011, almost 26 million people on the Medicare program availed themselves of this benefit.
Privately run Medicare Advantage programs have undermined traditional Medicare's fiscal health while taking a heavy toll on taxpayers. Doug Cunningham has more.
That's according to a new research article published in the International Journal of Health Services. The researchers say Medicare has overpaid private health insurance companies by a staggering $282.6 billion, most of that in the past 8 years. Authors of the report, Drs. Ida Hellander, Steffi Woolhandler, and David Himmelstein, say that's wasted money that should have been spent on improving patient care, shoring up Medicare's trust fund, or reducing the federal deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So last night during the big debate, Paul Ryan trying to make the case for the tax reform bill of 86 again, because, hey, Jack Kennedy did it, right? Reagan did it, and we're going to be doing it again. We're going to be lowering the tax rate again, cutting some loopholes temporarily on the very wealthy and, well, all everything for you and me. And then, of course, you know, we'll have legislation to bring those loopholes back. It'll be wonderful. And we'll be in the exact same situation we're in now, only worse, because we seem to keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper, which is why I think before this election, it's important to go back to September of 2008, re-examine the collapse that was, and figure out why. Which is why tomorrow night we're going to be showing the movie Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, at the Democratic Party headquarters there in Carlisle, 46 Lowther Street, 6 p.m. Make sure you're there. Heist, Who Stole the American Dream? I've got one of the directors on the line, Donald Goldmacher, who is one of the directors. Heistthemovie.com. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Donald, thanks for taking time for me.
You're very welcome, and it's heist-themovie.com.
Okay. We've got a link at the website at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Donald's name as well. So the question is, who stole the American Dream?
The simple answer is... The 1% and the corporations, of which they are part and parcel, have the game plan over the last 40 years that has systematically destroyed unions, deregulated the economy, and transferred wealth up to the very, very top, so that 400 people in the United States now own more wealth than the bottom 180 million.
Wow. So it sounds to me what you've just laid out is the entire Republican platform.
Well, there you go. But you know, the Democrats,
some of the Democrats as well,
were complicit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to go there as well.
Okay, good.
I mean, you go back to the DLC Democrats to me are just as bad as the Republicans.
Well, let's see. Who founded the DLC?
Well, you're not going to find a huge Bill Clinton fan here. You look at NAFTA, you look at some of the things that he's done, the telecom bill in 96, the welfare reform debacle. I'm sorry, not good policy in my view.
Well, not only was it not good policy, it was part of what we, you know, in more academic language, would call the neoliberal agenda.
Correct.
Which is really to transform what was moving toward a more democratic, and I mean it with a small d, a more participatory and a more egalitarian society, which was something really that the very, very wealthy cannot stand. You know, and I think you saw it best put by that secret video of Mr. Romney talking to a private audience of very, very wealthy people saying, well, you know, I don't really care about the 47% who, you know, don't pay taxes and are totally dependent. I mean, that's really how they look at people who are not of their class. And that class warfare from the top down has been, well, it was signaled by a secret memo, which we highlight in our film called the Lewis Powell Memo.
Right.
Which, again, people can find on our website and read it there, in which this guy, who was a tobacco attorney, a corporate attorney defending tobacco industry for years, and 2 months later was appointed by Richard Nixon, you remember that guy,
yep,
to the Supreme Court.
Correct.
He wrote a secret memo for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, of all folks, outlining a strategy of how to make sure that free enterprises, he put it, won, and that they would take no prisoners. Anybody that stood in their way, they would deal with. It's the language of the memo. And he lays out who they have to go after. In those days, and this guy is still around, poor Ralph Nader, he was one of the targets right there in that memo in 1971. Because after all, Ralph Nader was the nemesis of corporations. You know, his very famous book, Unsafe at Any Speed, Exposing the Recklessness of the Auto Industry, was just something corporate titans could not stand in this country.
Yeah, and if you look at the Powell Memo, and if you read through it, and I've told my listeners to read it and remember it because it's important. It is the playbook. If you look at it and you look back at what they've done, they've accomplished, well, just about all of it.
All of it. They've accomplished all of it, and you see, that was the strategy memo. But the real field manual, the playbook of how to implement it all, was called The Mandate for Leadership, and that was published 9 years later by the Heritage Foundation. And the Heritage Foundation is a direct offspring of the Powell Memo.
Right.
And the connection there is that several right-wing multi-millionaires, you know, known as the Koch brothers and Joseph Coors of Coors Beer, for all you Coors Beer lovers out there, they put together the money to fund the Heritage Foundation in 1975. And by 1980, the Heritage Foundation had written this 1,000-page, you know, sort of manual for how to implement a conservative agenda. And that's what they called it. Mandate for Leadership, and you can't find it anywhere unless you do a very rigorous interlibrary search, which we had to do in order to trace that book down after interviewing somebody at the Heritage Foundation. We could not find it online.
Yeah, you only get that with the secret decoder ring.
There you go.
I mean, really, I mean, and when I heard Romney give that speech and he came out and said he was inelegant and inarticulate, and my take on it was, no, I didn't see him grasping for words. He didn't stutter. He didn't stammer. That's how they talk to themselves. That's how they talk to themselves in their little rooms. It's what they've been saying for years behind closed doors. And it's only now that we, the working people of this country, are finally waking up to the reality that, well, to be honest, it's all about them. And this is what they think of us.
Yes. And, you know, unfortunately, this has taken quite a while for ordinary folks to begin to grasp just how deep this assault is, and this game plan has been their walking strategy for class warfare. You know, as Warren Buffett famously put it in 2006 to the New York Times, he said, yes, there's class warfare, and my side is winning it. And
but the question I've got for you, Donald, is what's taking us so long? I think back to my grandfather's generation.
Yes.
The World War II generation. My grandfather didn't go past eighth grade, but he was a smart guy. You didn't get anything by him. And he used to say, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. Because there's a reason he's taking money out of his pocket. And I look at all of this money going into all of this negative attack ads against Obama, and I see all of these attacks on working people, and I go, you know, hey, especially on unions, I go, hey, stupid, wake up. There's a reason they're doing this. There's a reason Diane Hendricks is getting all tingly in the panties asking Scott Walker if Wisconsin's ever going to be a right-to-work state.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the answer to that question is complicated, and we should take a few minutes on it. Number one is the role of mass communications. It is terribly important to understand that mass media has been deregulated over the course of the last 30 years, pretty much. Ronald Reagan did it first by eliminating the fairness doctrine.
Right.
Which meant that you saw the onset of Rush Limbaugh and his ilk. And they've been able to saturate the airwaves ever since that time. If you do a survey of talk radio around the United States, as one of our experts in the film says, you will find out that the 300 top media markets, it's 9-1
yep.
right-wing talk radio versus progressive radio.
Absolutely.
Now, a lot of people still listen to radio, whether they're driving to work or whatever, or they're at work, they still listen to radio. And one of the principal rules of advertising is you keep repeating the lie over and over and over again. And so with advertising, you have to repeat an ad 9 times.
Right.
The research shows by the 9th time, people say, oh, yeah, I know that product. That's a good product. Well, if you repeat the lie 9 times on right-wing talk radio or on Fox, you know, network, then people who watch it become convinced that's the truth.
Yep, I say they're learning by osmosis.
Well, no, they're being brainwashed.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there. They're inundated with it. And I look at Philadelphia, for instance, to highlight your 90, your 9-1 statistic there. Philadelphia, there are what I would consider liberal voices. Everything there, they've got 4 conservative talk stations. Nothing I would really consider liberal.
Right. So when that's the case, so you're driving to work, you turn on the radio, you know, you don't want to listen to music, you want to hear something talking, right? So you sort of fall into it. It's not like you were already born, you know, a child of Ayn Rand.
Right.
You grow into it because you're listening to this over and over and over again until your brain gets hardwired. And there is a neuropsychology to back that up. The research is there. And, of course, look what happened in Germany in the 30s. Okay? Goebbels was a master of propaganda.
Right.
And they used the big lie over and over and over again to convince the German people that everybody was the enemy of Germany, and Germany, therefore, had to go on the attack.
So then how do we turn this around? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you're right. They control the message. They, you know, the statistics, 80% of everything we see, hear, and read are owned by 6 multinational corporations. How do you begin to fight back?
Well, I think we have to begin to really take seriously the word democracy. And by that I mean we have to look at every sphere of our lives and decontaminate ourselves from big corporations while simultaneously democratizing our lives. So what would that look like financially? Financially, it would be, why don't we move our money out of big banks, too big to fail banks,
done
and move them into credit unions?
I'm with you.
Okay, now why would you move it to a credit union? What's the big deal with a credit union? Well, a credit union is a democratically run organization. The members of the credit union put the money in, deposit their money, and then they can borrow it. Very reasonable rates. And they elect the board of directors. They, imagine that. The people who are putting money into a bank are electing the bank directors? Outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's socialism.
It's socialism, right? No, it's democracy. So people who put their money into a credit union where they can do any kind of transaction they can do in a big bank, in a too-big-to-fail bank, I'm sorry. But better than that, let's use the short end. It's a zombie bank. The big banks are zombie banks. They are being kept on life support by the Federal Reserve. So if you move your money to a credit union, which is the local institution, you own it, you run it, and you get a credit card, a debit card, you get a mortgage, you get a car loan, you get whatever you need.
Yep.
It's the same as any other bank. And guess what? It's federally insured. So even if, God forbid, the credit union went under, which they didn't during the 2008 debacle on Wall Street, your money is safe. Safer than it is pretty much anywhere else. Okay, so that's democracy of your money. How about democracy at work? What would that look like?
That would be folks joining unions, collective bargaining, and having a say in your working conditions, your wages, your hours, your benefits, all of that.
And let's up the ante a little bit. Let's look at Germany for a quick moment.
Yep.
In Germany, the national law is that 50% of the board of directors of any major corporation must be workers from that corporation. So that Germany's costs to outsource a plant are far too expensive than to remain in Germany. And that's why Germany did not tank after the 2008 crash. They were able not only to not outsource jobs, but when the, you know, the vast economic downturn happened, what did they do?
They cut hours.
They cut hours, not jobs.
That's right. And they also had a system set up. They also had a system set up where the hours that were cut compensated with unemployment insurance, so they didn't actually lose anything. And their economy didn't tank because of lesser demand.
So there you have it. So that's one vision and version of democracy of the workplace, to have really strong unions that have equal participation in the running and direction of corporations. And the other is for workers to actually own their own companies outright. Like the most famous example in Spain. Sorry to have to keep going to Europe, folks, but Spain has this amazing cooperative called Mondragon,
yep,
which has almost 100,000 workers who democratically run 200 subsidiaries of that overarching corporation. So they have 200 distinct companies within this Mondragon cooperative in the Basque region of Spain. Almost 100,000 workers, they too did not lose anybody during the downturn. And while Spain is really in pain and suffering now, this cooperative is not. Well, we have many workers' cooperatives in the United States, and for workers who are losing their jobs or being downsized or not being able to get rehired, maybe workers need to start to figure out how to meet one another, and maybe even unions could sponsor this.
Yeah.
Of getting worker-owned businesses started.
That's an excellent idea. And this is stuff we should be talking about tomorrow night when we show the movie Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, heist-themovie.com, the website. So tomorrow when we lay this out in front of folks, we're expecting, you know, 50 to 100 people to show up mm-hmm. to see this. What do we tell them? What's the marching order after the movie? I mean, where do we go with this? I mean, I've loved all of what you've said thus far. We'll talk about that, but where else would you like to see this discussion go?
Well, I think the discussions, one of the main points we make in the film, in the closing section, is make it local. And so everything I've been talking about of democratization, you really have to start locally.
Yep.
That means, If you really want democracy to happen across every sphere, politically, economically, socially, and within your workplace, you have to start locally. So that means sitting down with a group of neighbors or a group of people you work with and saying, let's watch this film together and let's see, what do we learn from here? What can we learn about from the city of Richmond, California, where they took on Chevron Corporation, you know, the guys who bring you that wonderful product called fossil fuel.
Yeah, the people were given $1.7 billion to build a cracker plant here in the state of Pennsylvania they were going to build anyway. Yeah, we know them.
Right. So Chevron has a refinery in Richmond, California, which they've had there since the inception of Chevron. And the city of Richmond is now controlled by a majority of Green Party folks. So they said, we're going to make the city green, and we're going to make Chevron help pay for it. So they put an initiative on the ballot to tax Chevron at an appropriate rate. And Chevron lost that initiative battle because it was people power versus money power. And that's the theme of our movie. There are two kinds of power, two kinds of organized power. There's organized money and there's organized people. So when people get organized, they can do anything, and they defeated Chevron. They passed that initiative, and Chevron's now paying 440 times more than they were 3 years ago.
Wow. So tomorrow night, 6 p.m., we're going to be showing the movie Heist, Who Stole the American Dream? Again, heist-themovie.com. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Donald Goldmacher's name. It'll take you right there. Donald, I appreciate the time. Got to take a quick break. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Let's take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you have experienced any of the following symptoms: crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
My job as a free-range commentator and political yakety-yakker requires very little heavy lifting. But as a Texan, I do have the occasional burden of having to explain Rick Perry's periodic eruptions of volcanic inanity. Or is it insanity? Perry, the now-famous Governor Oops, went off again in a recent conference call to promote a right-wing politico-religio-electioneering stunt dubbed 40 Days to Save America. The 40 days terminate on November 6th, Election Day, and the whole silly thing is nothing but a come-to-the-GOP Jesus altar call, orchestrated by the partisan pulpit pounder Rick Scarborough. Of course, it's a call to save America from Barack Obama. Los Dos Ricks were trying to gin up turnout among evangelicals who are less than enthused by a Republican nominee who's a multimillionaire Mormon from the Cayman Islands, so Perry laid it on thick. He declared that America is in the midst of spiritual warfare, forced upon purist Christians by Obama's, quote, effort to remove any trace of religion from American life. Really, Rick? When did he say that? Never mind facts, the governor claimed that we truly are Christian warriors, Christian soldiers, battling this separation of church and state which has been driven by the secularists. Yeah, satanic secularists like Thomas Jefferson, who wrote in 1802 about the founders' determination to build that wall of separation to forestall an American Taliban. Oh, pay no attention to history, cried the Right Reverend Rick. It's onward Christian soldiers to take, quote, the decisive action we need to spread God's grace throughout the United States. This is Jim Hightower saying, geez, Mitt Romney is the spreader of God's grace? That's one vicious God. So, how to explain this flow of political magma from Preacher Perry? Easy. He's insane.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Well, we know what happened to Eddie Munster. He was on the stage last night with Joe Biden. You see the little widow's peak thing he's got going on? It looked just like Eddie Munster. And you know, I said that months ago. Right when they announced that he was going to be the guy, I go, there's Eddie Munster. We now know what happened to Eddie. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. So, you know, as we were talking about with Donald Goldmacher there a minute ago, you know, this whole thing of how the wealthy class speaks to each other in their confines. And that video of Romney giving his famous speech where he says, well, you know, I don't care all that much.
There are 47% of the people who vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. That's an entitlement, and government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And I mean, the president starts off with 48, 49, 43. He starts off with a huge number. These are people who pay no income tax. 47% of Americans pay no income tax. So our message of low taxes doesn't connect. And he'll be out there talking about tax cuts for the rich. I mean, that's what they sell every 4 years. And so my job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them.
Nope.
They should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. What I have to do is convince the 5 to 10% in the center that are independent, that are thoughtful, that look at voting one way or the other, depending upon, in some cases, emotion, whether they like the guy or not.
Yeah, well, evidently no one likes you, but, you know, the reality is, you know, like he said, I don't care about them. Don't really care, no.
And so my job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them. They should take personal responsibility and care for their lives.
No, they shouldn't take personal responsibility. And you listen to that and you go, well, you know, did he sound like he was stuttering? Was he reaching for words? Was he stammering? Was he inelegant? No, he was actually talking in their language. And he was very, as a matter of fact, these people are dependent. We heard it last night during the debate. Brought it up again. These are dependent people. They think they're victims. No, these are folks who want to work for a living. They want to make a decent wage. They don't want their job shipped to China. In fact, we talked to one woman last night who, thanks to Romney's Bain Corporation, Bain Capital, their jobs are going to China. But it's not just Romney. It's the wealth class and their minions and the people that they fund. And Think Progress got this video back from December of 2011. This guy who's a Republican who's running for Congress out there, John Oster is his name. He was at a fundraiser there in Everett, Washington. And he was, you know, again, very, very frank, very, very to the point.
Now, most people know our tax system needs reform, but not reform isn't just taxing the rich. The very people, by the way, who create jobs. Our economic system has been the envy of the world for generations. But it seems to get more convoluted and more onerous every year. And under this administration, it has become a system that punishes those who dare dream, those who dare to invest, those who dare to work hard or succeed. And it seems to reward the mediocrity, dare I say it, slothfulness and laziness of those who choose not to do those things. And furthermore, it creates a dependency, it promotes a dependency on government programs, even an addiction, I would say.
Addiction.
By virtue of this sense of entitlement that it creates.
Sense of entitlement.
And I can tell you, those people aren't the 99%.
No, they're not the 99%. These are the slothful 47%, the lazy, the ones who don't work or don't want to dream or don't invest. And I go, again, you know, this is their theme. And if you keep saying it enough, maybe someone's going to believe it. But I look at Romney's 47% comment. I look at that Gina Reinhart, the billionaire woman who, well, you know, she worked really hard coming out of that birth canal to inherit $30 billion. I mean, that's a lot of work, saying that people are slothful and lazy and they spend too much time drinking and smoking and they should work for $2 a day and that they could become billionaires that way. I mean, this is what they whisper in each other's ears. This is what they've been saying. And now they feel emboldened because they think that, you know, times have been tough. People who get up and, you know, people who are just holding on, they want to look for someone to blame for why things are so tough. And it's always easy to blame the guy behind you. It's always easy to blame someone that you see instead of someone like Romney who... The decisions that his company makes, the company that he birthed, the spawn of his capital loins, if you will, what they have done to this country, the jobs they have sent overseas, the lives they have destroyed, and all of this, corporations are our friends, our people. No, Walmart is not a person. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Walmart. I got one of the workers who was on strike here this week. Quick break, right back after this.
On the radio, with my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m., I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
For your
firm.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky.
Thursday, October 11th. The waning crescent moon and dazzling planet Venus will come closest together for the month before sunrise tomorrow morning and Saturday.
They'll be the brightest and second brightest nighttime worlds, pairing up in the eastern pre-dawn sky for the next few mornings. Given clear skies and an unobstructed eastern horizon, you'll be able to see Venus and the moon before sunrise, no matter where you are in the world.
At mid-northern latitudes, the moon and Venus will rise about 3 hours before the sun. At middle latitudes in the southern hemisphere, they'll rise only shortly before sunrise.
Venus is the second brightest planet, and there are several reasons why. Venus is the second closest planet to the Sun after Mercury, so the intensity of sunlight hitting Venus is much greater than for the more distant planets. Also, Venus's orbit is the closest one to Earth's orbit. Plus, Venus's cloud cover reflects a greater percentage of its incoming sunlight than any other solar system planet.
The reflective cloud cover surrounding Venus makes this world outwardly bright and beautiful, yet inwardly dark and mysterious. Tomorrow, before sunrise, look for this beautiful planet basking in sunshine and shining close to the thin, waning crescent moon. If you miss them tomorrow, look again on Saturday. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
It's intimidating, but it's nothing we are willing to back down on, you know? I mean, we're not just out there fighting for our own rights. When we're out there fighting a company like Walmart, we're fighting for every associate they hire worldwide.
Well, you know, that's the hope. The hope is that you see these folks in the last couple of days have just been amazing in my view, where you're seeing these workers finally saying, you know what, enough is enough already. We're going to stand up for better conditions. We're going to stand up for better wages, better benefits. We're going to say no more. I mean, and it just blows my mind that you look at Walmart, a company that, well, the people who worked so hard coming out of the birth canal now have $70 billion. And how'd they get it? Well, off the backs of their workforce. And I've got one of the workers on the line. Josh Matta is a Walmart worker there in Dallas, one of the folks who was on strike. The strike is now over. People are back to work. But I got to be honest, this is going to send a solid message, and I'm hoping to see some significant change. Josh, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm good. Tell me, how'd you get involved in this? How did this whole thing start with you?
Well, you know, I got hired at Walmart a little over a year now, and I've seen a lot of issues at management level. They're not really well trained. Disrespecting the associates. They don't treat people right. So I always, you know, trying to help people out. That's probably around last December when I found out about Walmart, which is Organization for Respect. And it just took just a couple of sentences from the forrespect.org website for me to join. And, you know, we're here trying to change basically the world, because whatever Walmart does, everybody else wants to copy. So we're trying to change Walmart on this, not only for ourselves right now, but for future generations.
Right.
I personally have 4 kids, so, you know, I want them to grow up to a society that has such a good employer that, you know, they will get the respect and the dignity they deserve, even, you know, as a client or even as an employee.
Right.
So, yeah, we try to change that right now.
So, you know, in the place where you work, what's the environment there like?
Well, everybody's excited about what we just did on the strike last Thursday. Still people still scared. You know, company, the management tried to keep them scared, you know, talking to us and all that stuff issues. But they're, in general, they're pretty excited about what we just did. I came back to work Thursday night. I work overnight maintenance. So Thursday night, actually it was last night, I went to work. And I was, you know, I got a lot of thumbs up. A lot of people just approached me and told me that enough was enough, and it was good for us to start doing it. And they're excited.
Well, I'm excited. I got to be honest with you, Josh. You know, this is exciting because, you know, Walmart has, in my view, led this race to the bottom, this destruction of decent wages for retail workers and for manufacturers as well. And it's about time that someone says, you know what, no more. You're going to have to turn this around, and maybe by what you have done and what your coworkers have done, maybe we turn this tide of repressing and holding down wages and you know, destroying manufacturing in this country to maybe turning it around and seeing a spiraling up of wages and conditions.
Yeah, and that's what we're hoping to do to accomplish. We have several thousand members are on the country right now, but after what we did, you know, we showed them that we're not scared, and like you mentioned earlier, enough is enough. So people are tired, and a lot of people are still a little scared. But once somebody shows them the right path, I'm pretty sure they're going to join the cause. Either they join our association, they're going to be by themselves, but they're not going to be alone. We're going to be there to back up every single person that wants to join this cause. And if the company doesn't understand that, well, we're going to keep striking. We're going to keep showing them who really has the power.
Right. And the power is in the numbers of these. I mean, there are 2 million Walmart workers across this country. And if you could organize them to stand in solidarity shoulder to shoulder with one another, you guys truly could change not just your workplace, not just the country, but the world.
Exactly. And, you know, like last week, I had the opportunity to be in L.A. At an international convention, the Union Walmart Alliance was created. That means that Walmart has unions anywhere in the world but the U.S. So they basically, we have people from Zambia, South Africa, Canada, the U.K., Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay. We got people, I think it was around 9, 10 different countries in there, just to mention some. They basically came out and say that they basically support us. You know, it's like they don't want Walmart to do the same thing on their countries, so they came out.
Yeah, I mean,
with this alliance.
They're going to support you because, look, they understand, and I think all working people need to understand that, you know, you may not work at Walmart, but we're all working people are in the same shark tank. And we may not be the flavor of the month now, but eventually the shark gets hungry for all of us. And those workers in other countries, they get working class solidarity. They get the fact that what happens in the U.S. to workers here can and will affect them there. As we should say the same thing about China or any of the countries that you named. As those working conditions are, eventually they're going to come home.
Yeah, and exactly that's one of the things that I talked to them, that I don't really want that to happen to anybody in there. That's what we're fighting over here. And, of course, they don't want that to happen, so they're backing us up in the fight over here. And it's a never-ending fight, and it's probably going to be a never-ending story. But as much as we can do, the more allies, like you mentioned earlier, too, you know, we have the strength of numbers. So the more we have, the more we can show them who has the power, the better it's going to be, and the faster we can change the world, basically.
Yeah, you know, I'm disheartened. I got to be honest, though. You know, as someone who loves this country and believes that this is an exceptional nation, that I hear that, you know, people, workers in Zambia and workers, and other places, Chile and all the countries that you named, are saying that they want to help you succeed here so that you don't bring them down. That, to me, really is not what makes this country great. What I think makes this country great is workers around the world saying, you know what, we want to be like them. We want to be have the raised conditions that they have instead of what we've seen Walmart be able to do here in this country. And I'm disheartened by that.
Yeah, but I'm excited, you know. I'm overwhelmed, and sometimes I don't find the words to actually express how happy I am and how excited I am that, you know, we not only have a lot of allies here in the country, but we have a lot of new allies and a new family outside of, you know, the country, around the world. So it's pretty exciting for us to actually have that much power, but we need more people.
Yep.
So we need more and more and more.
We have
a lot of power.
But how would the Walmart workers in our listening area, of which there are many, how would they join your group? What would you tell them? You know, what's the pitch to them to say, hey, you know, come stand in solidarity with us?
Well, you know, basically everybody has problems. As much as I want to ask some people, everybody has an issue, everybody has a problem, and the same problem they have, it happens in every single store around the country. So if they do have a problem and they do want to do something about it, I'm pretty sure in their store there should be one person at least as part of our organization. If not, they can go online and check forrespect.org. They'll find the information. They can join right there. Or they can, you know, they can leave an email and we will personally contact them. If there's a lot of many ways that they can join us. I mean, they don't have to be just an error. I mean, they can be our supporters. But as long as they actually help, that's what's important, the help, the solidarity that we have, that's going to be the power for us to change this company, and we just need them, too.
Yeah. The website, again, forrespect.org. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Joss Matta's name, it'll take you right there. Let me ask, in the future, now that you've had this amazing this strike, these actions, and you've gotten all of this attention and all of this this media, where do you go from here if the demands that you guys are asking for, which don't seem all that far out, aren't met? Where do you go from here?
Well, we basically, whenever we visit them on home office, we told them that, you know, we want to see changes before Black Friday. If that doesn't happen, we're just going to ask all the community. We're working on the community and a plan to strike on Black Friday. And, you know, as you know, that's one of the most important days for a retailer. So we have been given a lot of chances to this company to come out and talk to us and try to fix the problems. It's been a little more over a year. So, you know, we're given the chances to actually come out and do something about it. They just don't want to do it. We have the power of the people. We want to show them. We're going to strike, and we're going to keep doing it. And we're going to keep doing more and more and more until they actually decide, you know what, it's time for us to talk to you. Whenever they know that we have the power, they just don't really want to give us that reason. But we want to keep just doing. The fight continues, and we'll go to the end. I personally will go to the end. I want to see this company be better for me, for my neighbor, for all the customers, the employees, even all the executives. But I want this company to be the best place to work. I just love Walmart, and I want it to be the best place ever. So it's a fight, and we will do it.
That's an interesting way of putting that. I mean, you know, a lot of the folks that I talk to who, you know, they say, well, you know, I like the company I work for, but they don't treat me well. I struggle with that mentality that you like the place you work even though they don't treat you well. And I give you credit for that. And wanting to change things, me, I would just say, you know, the hell with you, I'm leaving.
Yeah, I mean, that's optional. You know, anybody can just do the same thing. But, I mean, to me, it's enough is enough. And running is not a solution. So if you want to do something about it, if you really worry about something and you just don't want to be running around, stand up, do something.
And
you
make
know,
it better.
We have that little model, stand up, live better. So now this is the time. You want to do something, help us out. You're tired, but you like the company. Well, let's make it better for everybody.
There you go.
You know?
There you go. And I got to tell you, Josh, I give you nothing but the utmost respect and credit. You're a brave individual, and the folks that you stood with, I give them nothing but the greatest of respect. And I'm hoping that the Walmart folks in our area and across the country join together and do just what you said, make it a better place to work, better conditions, better wages, better benefits, and a better nation. Josh Matta, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
'cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground. Mr. Taft and Digger, Mr. Hartley can haul, and Mr. Reagan can supervise the crew. And if they find it too hard, they got the National Guard to fix the bayonets and shovel like fools. He's gonna take a lot along at an 80 short date for this miner to cool on down. Mrs. Hep can dig it, Mr. Hardy can haul it, 'cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
They discriminate by race and hate. Won't pay nobody a living wage. One more's here, let's all rejoice. Everyone is gone and we ain't got no choice. So one more. Give the conscious soul.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. And, you know, you look at the Walmart situation, and look, they have been one of the major players in our economy. And you look at the numbers are just overwhelming. You're looking at the largest employer of the country, some 2 million employees. The average American household spends something like $3,500 a year at Walmart. Not in the Smith household, but, you know, the average American. In 2006, almost like 2.3% of the GDP of the nation was because of Walmart. I mean, this is huge. And you look at the power that they wield, the fact that they can go into some of these big manufacturers like Rubbermaid or Procter & Gamble or the famous story of Vlasic Pickle or Huffy Bicycles and force them to change their manufacturing, force them out of the country, like in the case of Huffy Bicycle, because they've got so much power, so much control. And there's part of me that goes, you know, our bad trade deals are one thing, but the power of Walmart has led to this massive trade deficit. And we talked about it yesterday. The August 2012 numbers were out. Our trade deficit for the month of August, $44.2 billion. That means we bought $44.2 billion worth of stuff, more than people bought from us. China, $28.7 billion of that $44.2. Just China. And a big driver of that is Walmart. Because they go into these big companies and they throw their weight around. Because look, this is a behemoth. When Walmart comes to town, kiss the rest of your industry goodbye. Kiss the rest of your retail industry goodbye. And I saw something that kind of, it was one of those things that go, that wow, who made that correlation? Evidently this Barry Lynn in his book, End of the Line. Came out and said, you know, these are so powerful. This Walmart is so powerful that when a superstore comes to your neighborhood, the obesity rate goes up. They've got that kind of influence. Now, Matt Stoller, over at Naked Capitalism has an interesting take on this. He's from the Roosevelt Institute. He thinks that these strikes, these last couple of days of strikes, against this behemoth, may actually, as it has in the past, lead to better wages. Quietly, of course, you're not going to see them holding press conferences saying we're going to raise. But, you know, by standing up and by saying, you know what, hey, we want better, maybe they're going to get a little bit better. And my hope is that it doesn't end there. We got a little bit of something and we're happy with that. These jobs should be, if not solidly middle class, at least on the periphery. At least where you're not going, you know, I need food stamps to put food on the table, or I need Medicaid to make sure that the kids have health care, or the kids shouldn't have to get free school lunches because they're in poverty. Sorry, that's not the kind of dignity and respect that you need on the job. And you look at this, and for me, I go back to my grandmother, who, you know, during her work life, she worked at a place it was a smaller version of, which you're going to be seeing. And it's amazing to me how this whole retail setup is changing again. You know, we keep going from big box to little stores to big box to little stores. And evidently Walmart's going to be going to like Walmart Expresses, you know, the little markets, if you will. Back to little community markets because they've gone and they've crushed everything else. So when they move into those jobs are going to be the center of the community. We need to make sure that they pay a reasonable wage so that folks can, be able to shop in the store. And Matt Stoller talks a little bit about, in his piece, about the Treaty of Detroit, which, you know, back in the 50s, the famous story is that the auto industry and labor groups and the government all got together and said, look, you got to put this fighting aside. You got to put these strikes aside. You got to get to work, and you got to agree that, you know, you're going to give decent wages and benefits, and make sure that your workers are well paid. And there was peace. And you know what happened? The middle class grew, and those auto workers, they had money in their pockets, and they spent in the local communities, and that created jobs, and those jobs created jobs, and you had this spiraling of activity. And then Stoller goes in and says, look, then you had the 1970s, where the social contract was not about raising conditions. The social contract started to become, well, you know, Walmart. And what he calls the Treaty of Walmart. You start looking at, well, the deal was not between the automakers and the government workers. The deal was cut by, well, the government, China, and global corporations. And that's where the race to the bottom began. And when Josh said, you know, there were workers from all over the world out in California that he met who were saying, you know, we stand in solidarity with you. We stand with you in your fight to make the conditions better here in the U.S. on the job. Part of me just, my heart sunk. Because we have been historically the nation that pulls people out of poverty. We have been that nation that has pulled up conditions for everybody else. And now you've got this situation where we have given so much power to this big behemoth. We have given so much strength and so much might and so much influence that workers around the world are, well, trying to raise our conditions because they get it. And I think we're one of the last countries on this planet where the working people don't get that we are all interconnected. In fact, they've done such a good job, the wealth class in this country has done such a good job of pitting us against each other that we're not only fighting against Chinese workers and Vietnamese workers and workers from India or anywhere else, we're fighting against workers from Ohio and West Virginia and Michigan. And we're fighting against workers in the next town. I mean, that's where they've got us. They've got us fighting against each other on the micro level. Not just on the macro level, just down to the neighborhood. And I look at the A-hole thing. Well, we'd like a tax subsidy, please, to build a plant that we're already broken ground on, and we're going to cut jobs and probably wages, too. Oh, can we have a tax subsidy for that? You know, as a nation, stop and think about this. You know, when Carlisle Tire and Wheel left Carlisle and went to Tennessee, as a nation, did we get a net increase of jobs? Hell no. What we got was a net decrease in revenue into our coffers because we gave them millions of dollars as they pitted the two states against each other. The same thing with Yingling. They're going to build a plant, whoever the highest bidder is. And we're subsidizing something that they would build anyway. And I look at the cracker plant, $1.7 billion, and you use whatever numbers you throw out, $1.7 billion we're going to give to a company that was going to build the plant anyway. It's not like this investment is creating new things. They're going to do it anyway. And in the things that we would invest in that would create something new like alternative energy, well, we've got the Republicans who stand in direct opposition. Is there something wrong with this scenario? And I hope Matt Stoller's right. I'm hoping the wages and the conditions get better at Walmart. I'm hoping that this action, as historic as it has been, I'm hoping it makes things better for those workers. But more importantly, I hope that they don't, once things get a little bit better, I hope they don't stop. Because these could be good paying jobs with benefits like they have been in the past. And that's what I'm hoping they're fighting for. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to the Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. In the previous debate, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney told seniors over the age of 60 that they didn't need to keep listening because they wouldn't be impacted by his Medicare proposals. Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollock said on Thursday that seniors, in fact, should pay close attention to what Romney is selling. His organization laid out five key ways in which seniors would be impacted by the Romney-Ryan plans.
It would cause seniors to pay considerably more out of pocket with respect to premiums and other out of pocket costs. On average, over the next 10 years, the average increased cost that Medicare beneficiaries would incur would be $347 per year over the next 10 years.
Romney's pledge to repeal the Affordable Care Act on day one of his presidency would reopen the donut hole.
Affordable Care Act fixes this. It fixes it on a gradual basis. Right now, what the Affordable Care Act does is it provides 50% discounts for people purchasing brand name drugs when they are in this coverage gap. Ultimately, by 2020, the Affordable Care Act totally eliminates the donut hole. It eliminates this coverage gap. And so this would be a real help to seniors who have very substantial prescription costs.
Repealing the Affordable Care Act would also put a huge burden of preventive care back on the heads of seniors.
Seniors no longer have to pay anything for those, whether it's deductibles or co-pays. And in 2011, almost 26 million people on the Medicare program availed themselves of this benefit.
Privately run Medicare Advantage programs have undermined traditional Medicare's fiscal health while taking a heavy toll on taxpayers. Doug Cunningham has more.
That's according to a new research article published in the International Journal of Health Services. The researchers say Medicare has overpaid private health insurance companies by a staggering $282.6 billion, most of that in the past 8 years. Authors of the report, Drs. Ida Hellander, Steffi Woolhandler, and David Himmelstein, say that's wasted money that should have been spent on improving patient care, shoring up Medicare's trust fund, or reducing the federal deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
I'm breaking rocks in the hot sun. I cross the law and the law one. I cross the law and the law one.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Of course, if you missed any portion of the first 2 hours of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone, also the TuneIn app as well. I look at what's going on across this country, and I'm excited by what's going on at Walmart. I'm excited to see workers in the streets. I'm excited by people coming together, but the wealth class, not so thrilled. And they're spending tons of money to make sure workers don't have a voice, don't have the ability to fight back. And you look at what's going on out in California with this Proposition 32, where they want to neuter and, well, destroy the workers' ability to have any voice through their unions, which is why I've asked Martha Cull, she's a statewide officer of the California Nurses Association, to come talk to us about Proposition 32. Martha, thanks for taking time for me.
Sure. Thank you.
For those who may not know, what is Proposition 32? What's the push?
The push in Proposition 32 is to prevent unions to pool their dues dollars and donate them to directly to political campaigns. It pretends to do the same thing to corporations, but most people involved in unions know that corporations don't use payroll deduction to collect their dues. So the most direct effect is that it bans us using those monies that we collect with via payroll deduction, using it towards campaigns. That would really harm us. I'm a nurse, and it would really prevent my union, California Nurses Association, from getting involved to protect patients in the legislature, to elect politicians who would help us, you know, pass those laws and regulations that we need to provide safe patient care.
Like not forced overtime like they had here for a while before the workers said, you know, did exactly as you've said, you know, ran a campaign to stop it. Also patient-to-nurse ratios, things like that, right?
Yes, nurse-to-patient ratios, workplace safety issues, safe lifting bills to protect both patients and nurses, regulating, preventing mandatory overtime, like you just said, is a very important issue. You can't take safe care of patients if you're sleep deprived.
Oh, come on. You can work. You're super nurses. You can work 36 straight hours. Come on.
Yeah, really.
And I got to be honest, you know, I was in a hospital a couple months ago, and, you know, at the end of the shift, I don't want people poking me with needles, let alone at the end of a second or a third shift.
That's right. And we don't want to do that to our patients either. We think the hospital should staff safely.
Yeah, and but, I don't want to be poked by needles anyway, just for the record.
But on Prop 32, one really telling thing is that who's funding the Yes on 32 campaign? It is being funded by very wealthy individuals. And maybe you're aware of this, but maybe some of your listeners aren't. Charles Munger, who's a California Republican activist, and he heads the Republican County Party in Santa Clara. He's contributed directly $1 million to that campaign. Oh, I don't know any individual workers who could do that.
No, I don't know, which is why I look at Citizens United and I look at the campaign finance laws that the lack of decent campaign finance laws we have in this country and in most states, and say we absolutely need to get some sanity in what goes into our politics. And, you know, I got to be honest, you know, I look at this, why would someone like Munger, why do these wealth people care what unions do with their dollars? What happened to the free market? What happened to Citizens United? What happened to that?
I know, and not only that, but I want to add that Munger gave $22 million to a Small Business Action Committee, a PAC, a super PAC, and they're using that to fund Prop 32 too. So and there's a super PAC that's also linked to the Koch brothers, who we know across the country, the billionaire oil tycoons. We know across the country that they've been working in many areas in Wisconsin, et cetera, to cut the power of union. And I think it's because they believe that they should have unfettered ability to control the political process themselves.
Yep. Well, I mean, you know, you saw the video, and I'm sure you've seen it. I know my listeners have heard enough about it from me talking about it. This Diane Hendricks, the billionaire from Wisconsin, who in the video about Janesville, Wisconsin, she goes to Scott Walker, you know, when do we make Wisconsin a right-to-work state? And she's all excited, you know, heightened arousal, if you will, at this concept, this prospect of being a right-to-work state. And why? She's a billionaire. She, a couple of times over, can afford anything she wants. But the one thing she doesn't have is that absolute, complete, and total control and absolute power.
I know, and I find that really, really very disturbing as a nurse who's advocating for her patients, both, you know, in the hospital and in the community, and as a nurse that's advocating for everyone to have the right to health care. You know, many of these very wealthy people are going to help, or trying to help, dismantle both Medicare and Social Security, these fundamental protections for all of us and when we need health care and when we retire. And the real advocates of campaign finance reform, the League of Women Voters, Common Cause, Public Citizen, all of them oppose 32. And it's 32 is being their ads. They're saying that this is some kind of campaign finance reform and not directly telling people that really this is to limit union power.
It's just a neuter.
And not just union power, but unions, because unions, we speak for all working people.
Yeah, and it's to neuter any opposition voice as well.
Yes.
And you know, I go back to what, you know, and my listeners have heard it 1,000 times. I'm sure they're sick of it. But my grandfather always said, you know, if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. And I look at this Munger character, $1 million. He didn't get to be a multi-million, if not billionaire, by being frivolous and by throwing money away for no good cause with no return on investment. For him, there isn't a return on investment in this.
That's right. And that's often how I decide how I'm going to vote, when you follow money, when you look who's funding either side of a campaign.
Yep.
And you can see that it's all wealthy, extremely wealthy individuals, corporate interests, corporations donating to super PACs. And sometimes you can't even find out who's doing what for quite a while, because those independent expenditure campaigns have a different name, like what the Koch brothers are linked to, something
Americans for Prosperity,
something like that. Yes, and they're helping fund Prop 32 as well. So that should tell us that we should all vote no on it in California. And you know, we all are, we're spending a lot of time on this, and that's also, probably,
isn't that the point?
That's part of the point, is to divert us from any other, you know, activities we could do.
For fighting for rights and making society better. I mean, and I've been saying the same thing here in Pennsylvania with this voter suppression law that the right rammed through. It's all about busy work. It's all about keeping labor groups and environmental groups and good government groups, keeping them occupied and busy while they raid the treasury and continue to do the bad things that they've been doing.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. They really, it's the one you said, that what it's about is complete control of all the sort of social process. First they tell us that government's bad, yet here they are playing completely in the political arena, which is so hypocritical, so that they can entirely control what happens in government to their own benefit.
So is this working out there? I mean, do the citizens of California, do they get this? I mean, I understand there's tons of money going into pushing this from the bad side, but are the citizens fooled by it?
Well, you know, I did some phone banking last night. I'm a nurse, and I called other nurses, and I had many interesting conversations. And when people actually hear the details of it, they're opposed to Prop 32. And so it's a question of us doing the work, because we don't have the funds. We do the work, you know, one-on-one, talking to our neighbors, talking to our coworkers, calling our members. I myself, talk to nurses on break when we're in the break rooms, those kinds of things. And we're really, all unions and different work settings are spending a lot of time and hoping to reach all our union members. And if all of us and our community members, our friends, family, our churches, people are really doing the work, because this would really cut all of our abilities, our workers' abilities, to have a voice in Sacramento, in our capital, to protect ourselves from, you know, unfettered corporate greed.
And look, the reason that I think it's important, and the reason I think it's important for residents of Pennsylvania, is if it passes in California, guess what? It's on our doorstep.
Elsewhere.
That's right. It's on our doorstep before we know it, and it's a fight we're going to have to fight. And it's the continual spiraling down. And you brought up talking to your members and talking to your neighbors and talking about these things. And I think there's got to be a working class awakening. I think the working class of this country has got to come to much like my grandparents' generation did, some basic truths. Which are, you know, look, you know, the wealth class, they don't have your best interest at heart. You, with your coworkers through your union, yeah, that's where you want to go, through your churches, through your community groups, absolutely. So trying to neuter them by these kind of laws, I have a serious problem with.
And what you said about the implications if this passes in California, I think this is a first step. If this were to pass in California, if workers, voters allow this to pass in California, and it prevents unions, which is, you know, the way for we workers to pool our resources and act on our own and our community's behalf. If it passes and then we are unable to do that, imagine what the next things are. California is not a right-to-work state, and yet right-to-work laws are being proposed all across the country.
Yep, right here.
Yeah. And if they prevent us from being able to work together to fight back, it would have horrible implications in California. And I think it would just be it's a sort of maybe a two-step process, right? You get this, or like voter suppression laws that you were mentioning. You suppress voting, and then, you know, that's a first step to get other things to happen on, you know.
It's, as I've been saying, it's all part of the No Rights at Work agenda. It's all part of the agenda to where you have no voice, not only on the job, but in society as well.
And I wanted to add, because you were talking about your grandparents' generation, I do think that we need to stand up, that more people need to get involved, either in their church, their workplace, their community groups, and come together on this. Because when I see on international news, hundreds of thousands of people in the street in other countries attempting to maintain essential services and a modicum of, you know, a level playing field for everyone. And I don't see that here. it's alarming to me.
Why do you think that is? I mean, do you think it's that we've been divided and sliced and diced, as I've been saying, we've been, you know, been separated and pitted against each other for so long that we've just become accustomed to it? Or is there some other dynamic that you think of?
You know, I don't know. I try to think about this a lot. And for me, who's an activist, I think it's I don't want to live a life where I don't feel like I'm contributing to the community, contributing to the society, and trying to make it better for both, not only myself, but for children, grandchildren, the future, and to everybody have a decent standard of living. You know, the nurses, we have what we call the Main Street campaign, where we propose everyone should have quality public education, everyone should have health care, everyone should have decent retirement. You know, that these should be standards in our society. And I just don't understand. Right now, it feels like there's a fair amount of resentment that the right has been able to denigrate, you know, middle-class workers who have a decent standard of living as somehow being the enemy of workers who don't yet have that. And there's a spiral downward as opposed to an effort to lift us all up.
Yeah, don't have it yet or have lost it. And most of the folks that I've talked to, you know, they've lost it and they have this mentality, well, if I lost it, you should lose it too, because if I can't have it, you shouldn't have it. Instead of having the mentality of you've got it, how do I get it? We've seemed to go the other way, and I liken it to Stockholm syndrome. I mean, for so long, workers in this country have been beaten and beaten and beaten that I think we almost identify with our captors. I mean, you look at the Republican Party at this moment, and please, sane, rational Republicans, take your party back to somewhere near normalcy. But you look at some of these people I know, man, different realities.
It is not only that, it's an easier, I've always thought on these kinds of issues that you're describing, that syndrome, is that it's, your coworker is an easier target in some ways, to resent your coworker rather than to actually do the work,
yep,
stand up, get involved, and try and take control of your work life or your community life and make it better.
Yeah, a good point. And, you know, and that's one of the things that we try and talk about. You know, we should be looking forward. And I keep saying, you know, it's easy to look at the guy who's behind you and think he's the one pulling you back, instead of, you know, this billionaire class that we, the working people of this country, have created, who continually, like the Walmarts of the world, have depressed conditions and have held down wages and destroyed benefits.
Yeah.
So last question I've got for you in this Proposition 32, anything we can do here in Pennsylvania, anything our listening audience can do to help, phone calls, what?
Well, we could first educate yourself. So the California Nurses Association website has a lot of information. The State Fed, California State Fed, the Labor Fed has a lot of information on the campaign and has lists ways that people can get involved. The website for California Nurses is www.calnurses.org, and that's a good place. And the Labor Fed, I'm sure you can just Google. And that's one way. And if you have friends or relatives or people you have influenced, since many of us have lived very far apart from many members of our families, contact them and make sure they're aware and that they're going to vote. We're still doing voter registration and urging people to make sure they are registered and then vote absentee if they're not going to be present on November 6th, all those kinds of things. So
make sure they get to the polls first and foremost.
Absolutely.
Again, the website, calnurses.org. We've got a link at therickssmithshow.com. Just click on Martha Cool's name. It'll take you right there. Martha, I appreciate talking with you. Thanks for the time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time, too.
Great talking with you. Let's take a quick break. Right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
My job as a free-range commentator and political yakety-yacker requires very little heavy lifting. But as a Texan, I do have the occasional burden of trying to explain Rick Perry's periodic eruptions of volcanic inanity. Or is it insanity? Perry, the now-famous Governor Oops, went off again in a recent conference call to promote a right-wing politico-religio-electioneering stunt dubbed 40 Days to Save America. The 40 days terminate on November 6th, Election Day, and the whole silly thing is nothing but a come-to-the-GOP-Jesus altar call, orchestrated by the partisan pulpit pounder Rick Scarborough. Of course, it's a call to save America from Barack Obama. Los Dos Ricks were trying to gin up turnout among evangelicals who are less than enthused by a Republican nominee who's a multimillionaire Mormon from the Cayman Islands, so Perry laid it on thick. He declared that America is in the midst of spiritual warfare, forced upon purist Christians by Obama's, quote, effort to remove any trace of religion from American life. Really, Rick? When did he say that? Never mind facts, the governor claimed that we truly are Christian warriors, Christian soldiers, battling this separation of church and state which has been driven by the secularists. Yeah, satanic secularists like Thomas Jefferson, who wrote in 1802 about the founders' determination to build that wall of separation to forestall an American Taliban. Oh, pay no attention to history, cried the Right Reverend Rick. It's onward Christian soldiers to take, quote, the decisive action we need to spread God's grace throughout the United States. This is Jim Hightower saying, geez, Mitt Romney is the spreader of God's grace? That's one vicious God. So, how to explain this flow of political magma from Preacher Perry? Easy. He's insane.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
We need to support people, you know, who have a history of it, know what it's like to sign the front of a paycheck, not the back of a paycheck.
If you're here to represent us, we're going to fly by. We say, save the USA, we're drowning in green and light. Save the USA.
I got to tell you, and listening to that, what a just an absolute ripoff. I mean, they are doing everything they can possibly do to silence any opposition. And with money that we've, that's what gets me. It's money that we've given them. It's huge tax subsidies. It's huge handouts. It's the Bush giveaways. And I remember yesterday we talked with Georgianne Kohler. And she spoke about her brother who, you know, if you heard the Romney comment about, you know, people don't die in their apartment with a, because they don't have health care, they just go, they get treated, right? He said, you go to the hospital, you get treated, you get care. It's paid for either by charity or the government or the hospital, right? Isn't that what they say? He said, we don't have people that become ill who die in their apartment because they don't have insurance. Her brother, because they wouldn't do a surgery to replace a battery. In the thing that shocked his heart to keep his heart pumping when it would go off. Wouldn't do the surgery to replace the battery. A quick surgery, according to her, about like an hour. Could have done it with no problem. Didn't have health insurance. So they didn't do it. So he died because he didn't have health insurance. And I spoke to a friend of mine this afternoon, and you know he lives in West Virginia, and he's, you know, one of these guys who, you know, trying to make ends meet, trying to living in a place with high poverty, living in a place where there aren't that those kind of middle class jobs that offer health benefits. And because he had an accident, someone hit his car earlier this year and totaled his car, and they paid him a like $6,000, I think the number was. That put him over, and his family, over the Medicaid allotment number by like a couple of bucks. So he lost the Medicaid that they had, lost the health insurance that they had. So he's been having gallbladder problems, and I know firsthand what it's like to suffer with these gallbladder things. In fact, you know, I was in the hospital 3 times for a week each time, and you'll remember we wasn't here. You know, being drugged up and, you know, the whole 9 yards, and hoping my numbers come down, hoping the pancreas and the liver aren't shot, and hopefully they'll heal and they won't die with taking me down with them. And I had insurance and got the gallbladder out. Well, he's had a number of these attacks, and this is what drives me nuts about our healthcare system and about our government policies, because we've got Republicans who say, well, you know what? We're going to put these really low numbers so only the really, really poor, only those who are extremely desperate, we're going to actually try and help. And even then, we're going to water down the benefits so that they don't actually get anything. Now, he's been in the hospital a couple of times. Because you get to the point, anybody who's had their gallbladder problems knows, the pain is just undescribable. I mean, I'm a big guy. I've been hit in the mouth with a baseball bat. I've been beat with chains. I've been hit with you name it. I've been hit with it, and I never felt a pain like I felt when I had this gallbladder attack. It took me to my knees. And the last time, I'm laying on the floor here in the studio, writhing in pain, my producer laughing at me, wanting to videotape it and put it on YouTube, but I'm writhing in pain and I can't stop it. So here he's in this same situation. They take him into the hospital, they pump him full of drugs, a couple of days later, they kick him to the curb, say, well, you'll be fine. When you get insurance, come back and we'll take it out. Until the next time when he has the same thing, because I don't know if you know, but you're going to continue to have these flare-ups. And eventually it does the same thing over and over and over again. Until eventually your pancreas dies. And then you with it. So he doesn't have insurance, but, and Romney's right, they're not going to let you die. So they bring him into the hospital a couple of days, they pump him full of drugs, kick him to the curb. Fix the problem right now. But do they fix the problem so that he doesn't have it again? No. And this is the problem with not having a national healthcare system. This is tip-of-the-nose stuff. This is not thinking down the road. This is not thinking with a preventative mind where you go, oh, this guy's going to have another one of these. He's going to be back here again. It's going to cost another $10,000, $15,000 in hospital stay. Why not spend the $12,000, take the damn thing out so he doesn't have to come back again? And in the process, not cause him the pain and the misery of having to go through it. And, oh, by the way, maybe you save his life. Because, you know, you only get so many shots at this. You only get so many bites at this apple to where your pancreas just goes, I can't take it anymore. And the liver goes. But we don't think like that, man. You know, the uninsured, the Romneys and the Bushes and the Republicans, they all think the same thing. Oh, you just go. Yet 45,000 people every year die because they don't have health insurance. One person every 12 minutes. Under the age of 65. And you know why they don't have it for people who are over 65? Because we got Medicare. And they want to destroy that. And you look at the Romney plan. What Romney wants to do, we got 50 some million people uninsured now. Romney gets in and does what he wants, we're going to have over 70 million uninsured. And I guess that's success in their mind. It's a good business solution. It's nuts. And I feel for my buddy, and there's nothing that I can do. This is a society thing. There's nothing an individual can do. This is where, as a society, we say no. No one's going to get sick. No one's going to die. No one, things that we can prevent. which is why this election is so damn important. And what he told me today, he goes, you know, I'm begging to hold on to January 1st, 2014, where maybe I'm going to have a shot at getting Medicaid. Maybe I'm going to have a shot at getting some health insurance so that I can get this take. I hope I live long enough. He's only a couple years older than I am. He's already thinking, I hope I live long enough. Is that what makes this nation exceptional? Hell no. It's not. Sad stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this, we'll talk radio news.
This is why we fight, why.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller CPA and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check them out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com. And take the worry out of tax time.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
According to the Associated Press, this woman in Texas, 23-year-old Dallas woman, evidently, according to the 2011 police report, she kicked her daughter in the stomach, beat her with a milk jug, and then stuck her hands to the apartment wall with super glue. Sentenced today to 99 years in prison. And, you know, you could argue whether that was, you know, that's the right sentence, but my first thought was, this is where we should have sent Jerry Sandusky. 30 to 60 for what he did, this woman gets 99, send him down there. Just my thought. Let's find out what's going on around the world and in Washington, D.C. I've got Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
99 years.
And you got Sandusky, who, you know, molested a bunch of kids. He gets 30 to 60.
Yeah, but, you know, he's not coming out.
Well, I'm okay with that, too, but 99 years for super glue,
Well, I actually think 99 years for super glue is excessive.
What would she have gotten had she killed the kid?
Well, I mean, they would get it at 500.
I guess that's
500 and boiling fat.
Wow, boiling fat. See, I like retribution. I think, you go and you super glue her to a bunch of things.
Well, that can work.
Yeah, I still like, the thing, I think it was it Korea where they caned the kids? For spray painting on the car. I'm a big fan of that.
You're a fan of that? No. Isn't that Singapore where they do things?
It was Singapore. That's where it was.
Singapore.
It was Singapore. That's right.
Yeah.
I got it confused. But still, I mean, do you think those kids will be running around with spray paint anytime in the near future?
No, I think that's not on their list.
Probably not. See, I grew up in a generation where, you know, mom didn't ground me. She just beat the living tar out of me. Because grounding me actually grounded her. A good beating, I'll never do it again. At least that was the theory. And I guess that can go too far. So what'd you think last night? Was it a bunch of malarkey? Was it a bunch of stuff? What'd you think of the debate?
Yeah, stuff and malarkey. I loved it when he threw that in right at the top.
It was fantastic.
I knew it was going to be a great night.
And I
enjoyed the smiling.
I did too. Made me realize that he does a very good job of whitening his teeth.
Yeah. I mean, and it was like, everybody's making a big deal out of this about the smoking and the smiling. The smiling said to me, I can't believe this guy is lying through his teeth.
What it said to me is, here's Joe Biden. That's Joe Biden. I've met him a number of times. I've talked to him a number of times. That's him. That's the guy.
He wasn't being different from what he normally is.
Absolutely not.
This is Joe.
I think I've actually got a picture of me with him with that same smirk on his face.
I mean, this is who he is. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing new about this. This is what he's like. He wasn't doing it. He wasn't doing anything. He was being.
Yep, absolutely.
Thought it was fine. What I couldn't stand, if I'm going to be pejorative, which I'm about to be.
Please do.
I couldn't stand that 45-degree rictus death grin of Paul Ryan's that was stuck to his face.
That's called constipation.
Is that what that is?
That's all I could think of.
Because that really irritated me, because it was clearly fake.
Yeah.
He wasn't smiling because he was having a good time.
Yeah. So you don't think Joe was too mean? You don't think he was unhinged? He wasn't a bully? He didn't look like an obnoxious drunk? None of that stuff in your mind?
You see, no, I don't. Number one, no. And number two, the right wing had decided whether they got together in a room with smoke-free room and decided it ahead of time, or whether this was one of these collective things that just morphed together. There was going to be a Joe Biden theme after the debate, no matter what he did.
Right.
If he just showed up and sat there and never spoke, there would be a theme. If he made a gaffe, if he was boring, whatever he did, there was going to be a Joe Biden storyline.
Yep.
This just happened to be it. They would have made something up if he'd been as boring as a piece of toast. They would have made something up.
Yeah, but the thing is that's what they're good at. I mean, they are good at politicking, and you got to give the right credit. They're very good at bumper sticker sloganeering. They're very good at the campaign game. Not so good at governing, not so good at leading, but really good at divisiveness, really good at sloganeering.
And I think one of the questions is going to be, will some of this stick? Or, 55 million people watched, so will those 55 million, who are the ones more likely to vote, presumably, make up their own minds about this?
Yeah. You know, some of the things I liked about the debate, and I give Joe Biden credit. He was himself. That's what I was hoping. He would come out and he wouldn't try to be guarded. He would just lay it out, and he did. And one of the lines that I liked that somebody's finally calling them on is, you know, these guys are betting against the country all the time. And it was one of his lines. You guys are betting against this country all the time. Always saying, you know, we're in decline, we're in spiral, the economy's horrible, all of this stuff. And finally someone said, hey, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he called him out on the 47% thing. I like that. I got a bridge to sell you.
Glad he got that in, and I'm glad he kept hammering away at that, because people, you know, not everybody's heard it, almost everybody's heard it, but that seems to be fading away from people's memories, and it really shouldn't.
So the question,
and obviously Paul Ryan had been coached on the comeback, you know, which is that some, you know, which is that line about, you know, you sometimes say things, you know, make gaffes, or how, I don't know how he phrased it, but Joe Biden came straight back with, I always say what I mean, and so does Mitt Romney.
Yeah, and that was a perfect comeback. And as I'm thinking this through, I'm going to, that had to be, Ryan had to make that up beforehand. He had to know it was coming, and Biden had to think of that up beforehand too, I think. I don't know that that's off
the cuff. He had to have thought that one out beforehand, but if he didn't, he thought on his feet very quickly.
Yeah, you know, but I did like the, oh, now you're Jack Kennedy thing.
I loved that. He was just on a roll with that.
I mean, why not? Paul Ryan's an Olympian. Why not JFK?
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at this, and, you know, I guess we're any, in your opinion, I mean, you're the one who follows this stuff really, really closely on Libya and what's going on over there. Were Ryan's attacks based on reality? I mean, some of the stuff that I've seen, you know, kind of not so much.
Not really.
Okay. So, again, you know, just platitudes then, huh?
Yes, I would say so. Not really, you know. Now, I do think there's going to be a theme over the next few days about Joe Biden said that they didn't know about the security request, and people are going to try and make it sound like, oh, he's not telling the truth, or that, you know, that they're putting out different stories. Of course the vice president and the president didn't know about the security request. What kind of administration would it be if a security request for Benghazi, of which there wasn't one, by the way, there was one for Tripoli, filtered its way and crept its way up to the president's desk? How incompetent would it be to have things like that go to a president's desk? That's not normal.
Yep, I agree. And that's one of the, you know, the baseless attacks that I think that they threw out. But at the end of the day, though, I mean, let's say there is a request that, you know, did make it to someone's desk. It is kind of their responsibility. I mean, the buck has to stop somewhere, and that's generally in that egg-shaped office.
Yes, if the request comes, and if they saw the request, that is their responsibility. But they didn't get the request. It had to be dealt with by the State Department. And I've been in briefings this week with Jay Carney, and he said that, you know, there wasn't enough security and that there was a failure. They are clearly acknowledging that there was a failure.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. And the other part of this is the Ryan made the attack, and it stuck with a couple of my friends who said, well, they're not calling that a terrorist attack. Even to this day, they won't say it's a terrorist attack. And I said,
that's not true.
It's not true. They came out and said the next day, I think. It was the next day, right?
Obama called it an act of terror.
So, again, you know, you look at this stuff, and I guess it is what it is. And the death panel thing came up again. I was expecting that. And the $716 billion that Obama is stealing from Medicare, that same $716 billion that Ryan was going to steal.
Right? Fascinating. It was all just, you know.
It was fun. I got to be honest. The first half of that debate just flew by, and I didn't want it to end. I thought the first half was that good, and then the second half, you know, kind of got bogged down. I think some people, you know, who don't follow this stuff, kind of maybe will have glossed over, and, you know, because it did go a little bit into the weeds. But the first half, wow.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good.
So let's talk about Bill Clinton, or defending the State Department. I mean, Hillary defending the State Department.
Yeah, Hillary defending the State Department. Well, that pretty much goes back to what we were talking about just now.
Right.
Because she was out there, and she was speaking to an event from the Center for Strategic and International Studies today. And she was saying that, you know, the people, the diplomats around the world can't operate from bunkers. And that you can't have perfect security, basically, is what she was saying.
Right.
So she was making that very clear. She also said that the precise details of the September 11th attack on the consulate in Benghazi are still unclear. But she did say the Obama administration is committed to uncovering the truth. And she said there's still much the administration doesn't know about what happened. She also said that no one in the administration was motivated by anything other than determining the facts in the case.
Yeah, I look at this, and again, as you pointed out earlier, you can't know everything all at once, and as the intelligence comes in, that's when you deal with what you've got.
Right.
So I look at this, and again, last night, while it's a lot of it that was on foreign policy, which Paul Ryan clearly, not his bag. His bag was the Medicare thing. And were you as taken by the question from Radovich that you know, it's common knowledge that Social Security and Medicare are in trouble and they're broken, and gave him really just a softball for him to go, oh, absolutely, it's broken and it's bankrupt.
Yeah, I thought he gave quite a few softballs, actually.
Yeah. So when the right says that, you know, she was in the Biden Obama pocket, not so much.
Not so much. No.
Not so much. Cyber attack imminent, according to.
Yes, imminent and dire. Now, this isn't the first time that Secretary of Defense Panetta has been saying this, but he said it very, very clearly this week. And the reason that I wanted to mention this as one of my news stories is because if and when this happens, I don't want people going around saying, oh, we didn't know about this. Oh, this is a lapse. No. Leon Panetta has been going around, as has the Obama administration, saying, this is really serious. We want legislation to deal with this, and it's being blocked by Republicans in the Senate. He says that the U.S. is facing the possibility of a cyber Pearl Harbor.
Wow. And where's this coming from?
It says we're increasingly vulnerable to foreign computer hackers who could dismantle the nation's power grid, transportation system, financial networks, and government.
So with that said, you know, do we not think maybe we're a little too dependent and reliant on computers?
Well, we clearly are, but I don't think we can walk that one back.
No. Yeah, I remember Y2K, the world was going to come to an end and people didn't know how we were going to drink water.
I know. But even defense officials are saying his words are not hyperbole. And he was responding in part to a recent wave of cyber attacks on large American financial institutions. He says an aggressor nation or extremist group could use kinds of cyber tools to gain control of critical switches. He says they could derail passenger trains or derail passenger trains loaded with lethal weapons. They could contaminate the water supply in major cities or shut down the power grid across large parts of the country.
Nice. And what's the suggestion on how you stop it?
Well, one of the things he's pushing for is legislation on Capitol Hill that would require new standards of critical private sector infrastructure facilities like power plants, water treatment facilities, and gas pipelines where a computer breach could cause significant casualties or economic damage. And there was a cybersecurity bill in August that I've been talking about that the administration wanted as a priority, but a group of Republicans led by Senator John McCain blocked it because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce said it would be too burdensome for corporations to comply with it.
It would be costly. It would cost them $5 or something.
Right.
Again, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, most of us think we already have. Most of us would think that, well, these are already in place because this is what, oh, I don't know, government should be doing. These are the kind of things that should have already been done. You know, maybe just a thought.
Well, no, I think you're right. I think many people probably think that we already have these things in place and we're safe. They just assume, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a couple years ago when Bob Casey was pushing this communications plan. It was after 9/11, but he was pushing this communications plan so that all emergency responders could communicate. Thought we already had it. Evidently, we didn't.
No, we didn't have it.
Jeez. And lastly, the meningitis outbreak. Did the officials have the authority to act?
Well, that's not clear. It's not clear at all. Federal and Massachusetts authorities are saying, because, of course, this particular company that is responsible for compounding the materials that caused this meningitis outbreak all around the country, they're saying they lacked clear authority to take action earlier against this closed pharmacy. There were safety alarms set up at least 6 years ago, by the way, about against this company. But they say that there was what's described as a murky, archaic regulatory apparatus that hampered their ability to keep pace with the rapid changes in compounding pharmacies.
Uh-huh.
So they say it's really unfortunate that it sometimes takes a tragedy to bring about change, and they're also calling on industry officials and lawmakers to adopt a new regulatory scheme that appropriately controls the risk. So the FDA is saying it's really not our fault, which is interesting because some other experts here are saying, well, to some extent it may not be, and yes, they do play whack-a-mole with compounding. You know, if they hear about the problem, they whack at it.
Right.
But they simply don't have the resources to take this on. that's one of the problems. They just don't have the resources to take these companies on.
Well, that's all of our regulatory agencies. I mean, they've been so – all of these regulatory agencies, their budgets have been so badly slashed, and they're so neutered and cut to the bone that, you know, they can't. They can't be everywhere at once. They can't be at half – they can't be anywhere, really. I mean, I saw something that OSHA, if they wanted to inspect every job – every workplace in this country, would take like 150 years just to inspect once. I mean, that's what we've done to these regulatory agencies. And what you, with the Ryan Romney people, just deregulate. Let the companies will police themselves. Let those dead people, let them sue, right?
There you go.
There you go. Victoria, always great talking with you. I hope you have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Our good friend Victoria Jones. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by Ask Me Council 13.
Earth, sky.
Thursday, October 11th. The waning crescent moon and dazzling planet Venus will come closest together for the month before sunrise tomorrow morning and Saturday.
They'll be the brightest and second brightest nighttime worlds, pairing up in the eastern pre-dawn sky for the next few mornings. Given clear skies and an unobstructed eastern horizon, you'll be able to see Venus and the moon before sunrise, no matter where you are in the world.
At mid-northern latitudes, the moon and Venus will rise about 3 hours before the sun. At middle latitudes in the southern hemisphere, they'll rise only shortly before sunrise.
Venus is the second brightest planet, and there are several reasons why. Venus is the second closest planet to the Sun after Mercury, so the intensity of sunlight hitting Venus is much greater than for the more distant planets. Also, Venus's orbit is the closest one to Earth's orbit. Plus, Venus's cloud cover reflects a greater percentage of its incoming sunlight than any other solar system planet.
The reflective cloud cover surrounding Venus makes this world outwardly bright and beautiful, yet inwardly dark and mysterious. Tomorrow, before sunrise, look for this beautiful planet basking in sunshine and shining close to the thin, waning crescent moon. If you miss them tomorrow, look again on Saturday. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
How do we explain the heat? One word, summer.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there from the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. Also, you can listen live through the TuneIn app when we're in different places where we are. Saturday night, 6 p.m., the Cumberland County Democratic Party headquarters are going to be showing the movie Heist, Who Stole the American Dream. A little earlier in the program, we talked to the director. Good guy, spot on, right on with the issues and, you know, the conversations that we need to have. We need to, as he said, localize in everything. I mean, you look at our conversation with the guy who works at Walmart. I would love to see local stores, smaller, locally owned stores. So far, a lot of work to do on that. Walmart has done a masterful job of destroying Main Street. But again, it's back to local. Go to the credit unions, go to the local banks, go to the, patronize the local businesses. That's how we're going to fix this. And November 6th vote, and hopefully not for idiots. I look at on CNN today, Mark Zandi from Moody's, who is, he was a campaign advisor to John McCain. He's the chief economist over at Moody's Economy. Middle of the road guy. I mean, someone who, you know, they claim is, his, you know, bipartisan, whatever. He was asked about the tax plan put out by Romney, and, you know, asked about the debate, and he said, look, you know, the tax policy center study, that's the definitive study. And they're nonpartisan, he said. They're very good. They say, given the numbers that they've been provided by the Romney campaign, his numbers don't add up. You can't lower taxes 20% across the board and cut the deficit. Can't happen. He says now, he goes, look, now the Romney campaign could adjust their plan. You know, that 20% across the board, they could adjust that. He says they could say, okay, I'm not going to lower rates as much as I'm saying right now, and they could make the arithmetic work, but under the current plan, with the current numbers, it doesn't add up. The arithmetic doesn't work as it is right now, he says. And look, he's hedging his bets, but the reality is, you know, they're going to go and close all the loopholes, going to go and close all of that, so they say. And folks like you and I, we're going to get hit with a tax bill about $2,000. And that's where Biden was right. When they do away with that, the child tax credits, when they do away with the mortgage deduction, they do away with the rest of the stuff like they did back in 86, you and I are going to be the ones holding the bag. And that's how they like it. That's how they've gotten to be the most prosperous billionaire class in history. That's how we've gotten to this situation of mass inequality. That's how we've gotten into this situation where the haves have so much and we've got so many people living in poverty. And Paul Ryan was right, 15% of the population living in poverty because of the policies that they put forth. Which is why tomorrow, on Saturday night, I hope you'll come out, 6 p.m., the Cumberland County Democratic headquarters there, 46 Lowther Street, are going to show the movie Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, have a conversation afterwards, and, you know, hope to begin that organizing that has to happen, where you talk to your neighbors, where you talk to your friends, your family, and we begin to have that solidarity. We start to think in that way that my grandparents' generation did, where there were some basic truths, where, you know, collective bargaining is a damn good thing. Make sure you get a little bit of the wealth that you create. Where policies that bring up the bottom help everybody. Where you want a strong safety, social safety net. So that, you know what? If unemployment hits your household, it's not poverty. What we've got now in what's going on in this state, they're moving towards poverty. And then the next week, wait for it's coming. I mean, there's a lot coming up in the next week or so. The pension fight is going to continue. There's more of this no rights at work agenda being pushed through as House Bills 50 through 53 are going to be discussed. The attacks on prevailing wage will continue. Of course, the payday lending bill going to be probably talked about. And of course, more privatization of the wine and spirits shops. You know, hey, why not? Anyway. It is what it is. If you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com. Any questions, comments, something I said got under your skin, made you happy, made you sad, Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Have a great day.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide, flood beneath the sway, imperial mystery.